This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hi, it's the best show. Wait, no, this.
Yes, now you know it's the best show.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the best show. My name's Tom. I'm the host of tonight's episode. And you are joining me on this beautiful August evening here. A hot August night, like Neil Diamond said. Remember that album cover where he was making some sort of gesture that would have you arrested if you did that not on stage at the Greek Theater? Anyone in the audience did that, they would have been hauled off. Only the guy on the stage got away with that. I don't even know what you'd call that. A thrust motion or something? I don't know. Just go look it up. The album has Porcupine Pie on it. It's a great album. We have an exciting show for you later. Not later. I'm going to play a record, and then we'll have James Murphy here from LCD Sound System. Very exciting. So this is what I want you all to do. Sit back. Relax. Don't relax too much, though. We're working now. It's not time to fall asleep yet. This is the second shift now. Right? In fact, don't relax. Splash some cold water on your face. Get ready. Second shift now. You got work to do. I'm here. You can wake up too. If I'm awake, you're awake. We are going to do the best show, and I want you to be a part of it as well. The phone number, as always, is 201-332-3484. It's the best show. Oh, wrong thing. No. Why? There it is. Oh, I can't get the levels right on this thing. Never could have that.
Show, and you
best show. What's up, everybody? Here, 2017, August. We find ourselves somehow all here together. Unless you're listening to this in the future, which is very possible. These things are not live experiences for everybody. So if you're listening to this, I don't know, like 4,000 years from now, in 6,017, I don't know what to say. What's up? What's up from the past says hi to the future. My name's Tom, I'm the host, and we just heard that was A Giant Dog from their album, Upcoming, comes out the end of the month, the new album, Toy. So good, they're the best. It's on Merge. Can't wait. I think they're playing Goner Fest. That'll be exciting, right? Down in Memphis. Everybody loves Goner Fest. Oh, so much fun. So much to do. So much to say. What did I need to say? I needed to tell everybody one thing. Oh, yeah, that's right. You know AP Mike. Mike, you're here tonight? Mike's here. How's it sound? Great? Okay, good. Good. Mike wasn't here last week. He was on assignment. He's back. Mike issued a challenge to me. He said, Tom, and I got to say, first of all, it makes me uncomfortable when he always throws my first name. It's like, I know who... You know who I am. You don't have to say Tom. Makes me think there's people watching and you're establishing something. My name for others. He said my sales over at apmike.bandcamp.com said it's a little stagnant right now. The merch is sitting, gathering dust. I said to him, we can move some shirts. He said that not. He said the masses tavern shirts. He said the markets. He said it's over. I said it's not over. I'll plug these shirts. You'll sell some shirts. I told him we could move 15 shirts tonight. Easy. He said impossible. So please, if you don't have a masses tavern shirt, oh my goodness. Well, you'll just be the talk of the holding cell you'll be in. You'll be the... Just picture you're in a holding cell. What's that shirt? People want to know. Everyone in the holding cell wants to know where... Why you have that shirt? It might go so well that they'll protect you when you use that wall toilet. Right? That is one of those things in my life. If I ever have to use that jail cell wall toilet. I'm okay. I'm ready to die. Okay. I'll hold off. I don't need to use the wall toilet. Is there a pill I can take that'll just kill me? Officer, give me the pill. I know there's pills back there that'll kill me, right? You have to have them. I'd prefer one of those pills than to use the public wall toilet. So go to apmike.bandcamp.com. Check out all the sweet merch he's got there. He's got a Massa's Tavern shirts. He's got autographed headshots. He's got his different songs and things he's done up there. If you've ever wanted to hear a children's story written by Mike but narrated by Harry Morgan's son, the son of Colonel Potter on MASH, boy, have you come to the right place, apmike.bandcamp.com. Charlie Morgan narrates the children's book that Mike wrote. So, I tell you that the phone number, once again, is 201-332-3484, and we sit here tonight in New Jersey. And we're doing the best show, and it's exciting. I'm just going to get right to it, right, Mike? Should I get to it? Makes me uncomfortable. He overcompensates. He sat out a week. Now he's trying to do 2 weeks worth of energy in 1 week. It's bad. It's Just click it down, Mike. Click it down. I want to bring my guest into the studio. James Murphy! What's up, James Murphy? How are you?
I'm okay.
Welcome to The Best Show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Now you, true or false?
False.
Okay. Well, I guess you're not in LCD sound system then. Crap. I think we got the wrong James Murphy.
There's a lot of us. It's not a...
There was another James. Mike actually brought a photographer friend of his who shares your name.
Yep. There's an excellent metal guitar player, James Murphy.
And who's he play for?
He played for Testament, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
I should look that up. I should be more correct about my name brother.
Yeah. But look, I'm going to say this. Whether it's the photographer or the metal guitarist, they're not on my radar tonight. There's only one James Murphy on my radar, and it's the one sitting across from me here. Thank you for coming to the studio. It's very exciting to have you here. It is an honor to have you here, dare I say.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I deserve it.
No, stop. You deserve it. Now, you, I'm not going to do true or false anymore. We clearly saw where that went. I'm going to just say true. You are the, what would you call yourself, the singer? Yeah, you're the singer.
I'm the singer.
You're the singer and
of the top 40 rock outfit.
LCD sound system.
Yes.
Yes. Now, you, I got to say this. You got a new album coming out.
Yes.
It's called American Dream.
Yes.
And one of my favorite albums ever is American Dream. It's the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young album. No, it's not. That's not one of my favorite albums. But what you've done, you've struck that album from everyone's mind now. Not unlike how these Planet of the Apes movies erased the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes movie. From
everyone. Wow.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but you forgot about it until you just remembered it now.
Yeah, I mean, you reminded me of it.
Yeah, but it had been forgotten, not right. Unlike the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young album.
But you remembered it.
Oh, yeah. Look, I have merchandise from it that I got sent.
Oh, wow.
And that's a fake signature, by the way, that... Our mutual friend Jason sent me that, and I was like, is this really signed by Tim Burton and Mark Wahlberg? And he was like, no, I faked that.
Wow, I totally forgot about this.
Yes, that Mark Wahlberg and Paul Giamatti was an ape.
I love that song.
And a timber. What song? Paul Giamatti was an ape?
Yeah.
I don't know that one.
It just seems like a...
Sounds like a novelty hit.
Novelty punk hit.
So look, not too late for a B-side, right?
Exactly. Well, you know, got to work on that.
Squeeze one out quick, right?
B-sides.
Because first of all, you guys just record these songs so fast. You just do them. You crank them out.
The blap.
Yeah.
Think of it and then it's there.
It's like that MSR thing where you'd send in the lyrics and they would just knock out the music.
Is that a thing?
Remember, do you ever hear those albums where it would be like the beat of the traps and those things where there would be ads in magazines where it'd say like, write a hit song, we set your lyrics to music, and people would write, they'd send their lyrics in, they'd write back and say, and any song, no matter what it was, they'd be like, we accept your song, now for $100,
we'll record
your song, and there would just be some band knocking these out over all day long recording. There's these different collections of them. They're the greatest things ever, that the same band and the same singer, they would just write these songs all day long and record them I'll play something later. There's a song, Jimmy Carter Says Yes, that someone wrote. It's one of the greatest songs ever. Do you know the difference between Big Wood and Brush?
Wow.
So someone was just like, I think, you know, it would be a good hit song, a song about the difference between Big Wood and Brush. And he said, honey, they accepted my lyrics. They're going to record it. I just have to send them $150.
I'm going
to
quit my job.
Yeah. And then they send an acetate back to you and it never gets pressed anywhere else.
I got
to
say, that's a if someone told me right now that for $150 I could get an acetate made, it'd be a deal.
Oh yeah, I would do it all day long.
It's a deal.
I'd be, they, I would, it would like you turn the thing on them. They'd just be like, this guy sent four more in.
Yeah, just I just send you, here's like 12 things. You cut me an acetate. You can keep your band on. They can cool their jets.
Yeah. And then I have an album.
Yeah.
Here's my album I made.
Thanks, suckers. You were trying to take me and I took you.
Yeah. I think that's the way to do it. I'm going to play a little bit. There's a song. There's a Jimmy Carter Says Yes. There's my the my favorite one is probably there's a disco song which is like disco, disco, disco. Are you going to Mount Kisco?
Really?
Yes.
I'm in.
I'm not here to talk about the MSR things.
Well,
I'm here to talk about LCD Sound System.
Yes.
And this album. It's so good, the album. I heard the album. I heard all of it. You suckers out there only heard two songs, maybe, right? Two?
Yeah. I feel potentially two slightly misleading songs, for the record.
Yeah.
Two songs I like a lot, but like they were really chosen to be released first because they were what we were playing well. We were going to play Saturday Night Live, and we were playing those the best.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the songs we played best.
Yeah.
So we're like, we'll play those songs.
But there's eight that these people haven't heard.
It's true.
Eight. And the album, you know what I did? I didn't listen to those two songs. I didn't listen to
you
I
just
waited
skipped
to
it.
Hear, no, I waited to hear the album. I didn't listen
Is that
to
it. Is that true?
You, yeah, I did.
Oh,
when
wow.
you put them out, I was like, I want to hear them in the context of the album.
Well, then that's a different. Then I think they fit. They make sense.
Yes, they do make sense. And I think for people, once they digest these songs as an album, they will get the entirety of it.
Right.
Will make sense. And it's kind of a. It's kind of like a. Like you see the cover of the album is that sky, the blue, right?
Like, yeah, painting by a friend of mine.
And you see that. And then when you hear the album, it's like the cover makes sense when you hear the album in a lot of ways. It feels like.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of. You almost need that cover to counter the album a little bit in ways. You know what I mean? It's like a really constrictive in spots. Like it's very intense, the album.
I feel that way too.
Like it's heavy.
It's a heavier record.
And that album cover almost counterbalances the heaviness of it a little bit.
Yeah. People were really mad at the cover. Did you hear that? Did you see that?
I saw a couple of people. Look, what are the people moan about everything all
day
long?
No, but did you know that there's actually, like, I don't know. When you say, oh, there was an article in, and then you name a publication,
mm-hmm.
you have to remember that there's, like, that could just be somebody who works there who writes a blog, but it's on that website.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a different thing now. You'd be, at one point, you'd be like, there was an article in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you'd name a publication. They'd be like, and then you'd be like, oh, well, it's on the website. It's a blog. You know, it's a guy who just said a thing.
Yeah.
But there was a Newsweek online thing.
Mm-hmm. All my favorite music I find out from Newsweek.
From Newsweek. There's a thing, and the article was, I mean, it was, let's be realistic, it was an op-ed piece.
Sure.
Was about how some people on Twitter really don't like the record cover.
Uh-huh.
Which, the world has to be a really static environment for that to be a Newsweek article, I think.
For the idea of, when you just think of literally the title, Newsweek.
Yes. In this week in news,
yes.
Some people who may or may not like a band
on this,
really don't like the cover.
On this other thing, Twitter. So, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Those people are going to eat a heaping serving of humble pie, James. When they see that, when they hear the album, they're like, oh, I get it now. When they hear that final song, right?
It's a short one. It's a quick little.
Yeah, but it keeps going on.
12 minutes long.
Yeah. And it's just like you've never ended an album like that before.
Mm-mm.
It's just kind of like, it's like. You know what reminded me of a lot of the album? Reminded me of like those Cure albums. Not necessarily pornography, but like, what? What were the ones, the two before?
Faith in 17 Seconds?
Exactly. Yeah. Like that's, Like there was kind of that. There's a vibe in that area there.
Well, those were big records for me when I was a kid. I went through a lot of phases, and I realized it's pretty funny when you look back at you're like, oh, that was 9 months when I was really into that band.
Uh huh.
You know what I mean? Like you go through things kind of quickly, but The Cure was definitely a big thing for me for a bunch of years.
What was the first Cure that you remember hearing? What would be the first time they were on your radar? Would it be like Love Cats, like that kind of?
No, it would have been probably Pornography.
Okay.
It would have been Hanging Garden.
Okay.
So that's like 83?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that record, The Top, was the first one I had
Okay, so that's like heard. 85, 86.
I think that's 84, because that's right before Head in the Door.
Head in the Door is 86 or 85?
I think it's 85, 86.
Because it's like, okay, so it's Pornography.
Again, who knows what
then,
years
But then it's like Love Cats. Pornography, Love Cats, The Walk.
Yeah.
The Top, Concert, which is the live album that includes Shake Dog Shake from The Top.
Yes.
Then it would have been Head on the Door. And then there's like a 10-inch called, I want to say Octopus, but that's wrong. And then it's Standing on a Beach, and then it's Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Disintegration of the Future. Stuff that I'm not. You know.
I was out the door on the double album.
Which one's the
Kiss Me, Kiss Me?
Yeah,
Kiss
I was because Standing on the Beach happened,
or
Staring at the Sea, depending what format you bought.
And
for me, that was like I always tended to a band once a band crossed into a certain size venue, I would begin to unconsciously dial out.
Yeah, and I get you with that because I was also
which is
at that
a crappy
point.
Thing to do.
Well, but it's a thing when you're at that age.
What are you trying to say?
When you're a kid,
oh, yeah,
I was a kid
when
too.
When you're a boy,
that was you'd be like there was also that was also the rise of things that I could go see in a place that held 200 people.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, no, I think I'd rather go see the noisier thing in the room where I can actually be right in front of the person rather than in an even bigger venue for a record that I think I like less than the one before.
Yeah.
So it was like you also had the option of better.
Yeah.
It's not just like I'm not into this because they're in a big room. It's like, no, there's more personal options for me at that point. Like, because if you're a kid at that point, if Dinosaur Jr. are doing Cure covers, and they're playing the Ritz.
Right.
Who are you going to go see? You're going to go see the actual Cure at Madison Square Garden? Or are you going to go
the
see...
The Spectrum.
Or the Spectrum. Yes. Because now you, that brings up a good point. You're a New Jersey guy, right on the line. Right on the line.
I'm closer to Philly than New York.
Okay, so you grew up in Princeton Junction.
Yes.
And which did you identify with more, Philly or New York?
Well, when I was a kid, New York was much more intimidating, but, and so Philly was much more manageable. Like you could go to South Street and go to like Zipperheads and like, what was the other, Skins.
Okay.
And you could kind of like deal with a really manageable size and you go to New York. But I had a friend, named Scott Waisman, whose parents got divorced and his dad got an apartment in the Village. So we would go to New York.
Yeah.
So I had different relationships with each city.
Yeah. Do you remember that first trip into New York with no parental supervision?
Yes, I do. I skipped school and went with Scott, and we went to New York, and I bought This Charming Man, the 12-inch from Bleecker Bobs.
Wow.
And was humiliated by the record clerk.
Uh-huh.
Because I walked in, and I just heard it on, we had really good college radio. I was really lucky. We had TSR from Trenton State.
Yeah.
We had PRB from Princeton. And we had RSU from
Rutgers.
So we had three different college radio stations at all. Like, so at some point I could listen to punk rock almost all the time.
Yeah.
And I had heard This Charming Man and I really liked it. And I went into got on the train, it was like eighth grade or something, and went to Bleecker Bob's with Scott. And I was like, I would like to get, do you have the Smith Brothers? and they're like, I'm like, This Charming Man. It's like, what? I'm like, This Charming Man, the Smith Brothers? And my father had Smith Brothers. There's like a, you know, it was like a...
Cough drops.
No, but it was also, I think, a singing group.
Oh, okay. I thought
and
you were...
No, but... And the guy was like... And the guy looked at me and was like, you mean the Smiths? And like kind of threw, just, like threw the record at me like I was an idiot.
Yeah.
And I was you know, humiliated. You know, here I had come to New York, like the Rube. I might as well have had like a piece of hay sticking out of my mouth, like a pair of overalls.
And, like the beginning of like the Welcome to the Jungle video. Yeah, you're getting off the bus with your suitcase and your backwards ball cap.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just
overalls.
Yeah, I really must have been like, you know, which way to the, you know. But so, and then years later, I was like, wait a second. This was before they were on Sire. It was import only. And I was 13. Yeah. I was like, give me a break.
This guy couldn't spot you. He's like, I'm not giving that 13-year-old 1 inch.
Yeah.
He's got to stick this perfectly.
But I kind of like, you know, I do feel like there's something. I'm not mad at that. I never got mad at record store jerks.
Yeah.
The record store jerks saved my life, man.
Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart. But we didn't stop there. We combined soft and bouncy to bring you new Sweet Tarts Gummies Fruity Splits, a uniquely delicious dual-sided gummy with one side that's sweet and one side that's tart, but entirely smooth and squishy. Mmm, a powerfully perfect combo. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and we love our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Yeah, I remember.
That's a shirt. I could make
record storage jerks save my life.
Be a pretty good
man.
Should I do? You know, I don't know about the common man.
Yeah,
but we could, you know, let's lose the common man as well. But we could. Mm-hmm. I could make that as a merch.
Record store clerks, record store jerks
saved my life.
It's true.
It's a good shirt.
I remember going to Pier Platters in
Hoboken. Yes, I remember.
Which was, I still feel for my life, the greatest record store I ever got to be a part of was Pier Platters. Was the whole, because it was kind of like at that point, to me, the best record store in New York was in Hoboken, where you actually had people coming from New York City taking the PATH train to go to this place in Hoboken, which is just kind of a testament to how great this store was. And I remember going in there, and it felt like Seinfeld, like the soup Nazi thing where you just go and you just like slide the record in the, just like politely, just like, I'd like to buy this.
And then you're just humiliated.
Yes. I'd like to buy this Chills record, please. And they like look at you. And for some reason, they were nice enough to take to think I was like a, like this kid's like a clown. Like, I was just like a goofball, and they were just like, that kid's okay. It's like Goodfellas or something.
Yeah.
Like, he's all right. Hey, kid, go
get us. Your hair up. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Go get us the paper now, like I'm going to get. But then you talk to friends, like, and they just be like, they treated me like garbage. It didn't matter.
Like they were traumatized.
How much money I went in there, I'd spend $300, and they'd still look at me like I was doing something wrong. To them, and I'd just be like, oh boy did I dodge a bullet on that one.
We had the Princeton Record Exchange, which for my money was the greatest record store, one of the greatest record stores in the world,
which I would drive down. And that's also me being in New Jersey, I was between Princeton and Hoboken, like I could go to either one. The great Don Rettman, Princeton Record Exchange, holding it down. And you go there, and they had all the records on the floor, and every once in a while you'd see Fred Schneider there looking at records.
Mm-hmm.
Like, be like, is that Fred Schneider? Like, Fred Schneider's on his knees digging through crates looking at albums, and you just watch Fred Schneider looking for records. Like, yeah, this is not, I think I'm just going to let Fred Schneider shop in peace.
Yeah.
And not.
Not stare at him. And
yeah, let's not stare. So you, as a young boy.
Young Turk.
A young Turk in Princeton Junction.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first stuff that kind of got on your radar that you were just like, oh, there's other stuff out there?
Well, there's a couple of, I guess there's a few phases. there's my brother is 10 years older than me, and so he was, in my opinion, you know, the coolest person.
All right.
But he was like into like Todd Rundgren and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Yes and mm-hmm. The Who.
The good
and,
stuff.
Yeah, like, but just like, dude.
Wait,
kinda
no. Why are you laughing, Mike? Mike, just get, this get, this, hold, just, I'm sorry, James. I have,
yes.
Mike, this, first of all, Mike, this is an A-plus level guest here and you're laughing. This is not one of these rummies we usually get in here clogging up the studio. This is a get. This is a get. Oh, for its Pitchfork right now, they're transcribing this. There's going to be 6 articles written about this radio show tomorrow on Pitchfork. You're laughing up. Yeah, because he says yes. I'll put those first five Yes albums up against anything.
Here. I'm actually, we have, I'm an unabashed Yes fan.
And like, then of course, amazing. You should be. How can you, like... Look, did they lose it? Yeah, of course they did. Of course they went off track.
Well, also, but how off track can you go if you've started from a, like, there was no way not to go off track when you've got Roger Dean flying fish ships on your covers.
Yeah, like, that's, well, they did Tales from Topographic Oceans, which, sure, that's fair. That is off track.
Or
that
is it, or Drama with, you know, who sings?
Trevor Horn.
Trevor Horn's the
and
singer.
And Jeff Downs. The Buggles joined Yes.
Yes. Who could have guessed that?
Their manager.
It's weird.
That's management in action right there.
Trevor Horn singing Man in a White Car. Yeah,
but the idea of their manager just going like that's like a manager just going, oh, the guy, John Anderson, Rick Wakeman want to leave. What if I plug the Buggles into that slot? It's like, and then everybody's like, what?
You know, Video Killed the Radio.
Yeah, just, they could do Yes. Those guys like Yes Records. They're the singer and keyboardist now.
It writes itself.
Yeah. And that people showed up to Madison Square Garden. They had already sold out Madison Square Garden.
And John Anderson is not there. And Rick Wakeman is not there. Yeah.
But suddenly it's like, wait, is that guy from the Buggles?
That's a guy with glasses yelling, you know, piping.
Who can't sing any of the, can't hit any of the notes. Suddenly is like, boy, this sounds not so good anymore. Like, but that album, like that album Drama, I'll stand by that album.
Yeah. Man in a White Car. Good job.
Stand by all those Yes albums. Yeah. Look, okay. Look, Relayer, maybe not so much.
Relayer is my favorite one.
The Patrick Moraz keyboard stuff spooks me out a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I hear you, but that was my, I got Relayer and Time and a Word. Those are my first two albums.
Okay.
So I have an attachment that I can't avoid. But no, but so anyway.
You know
so
what? But what are we doing right now? We're talking about.
Yes.
There's so many facts. We're arguing about which part of Yes is better than the other part. Mike.
Are you a Jeff Downs man?
Yeah,
are you, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Patrick Moraz, man.
Yeah. One and done. Gates of Delirium.
Yeah. See, I'm down with that stuff.
I could listen to it, but it's like a little too jazzy.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I just feel, but I'm in for a penny and for a pound with them. Well, you know, Close to the Edge is a big one for me.
Close to the Edge, you get no argument that it's like Starship Trooper.
It's a monster. It's a monster.
How about just
you know we played that at the last show at the Madison Square Garden show.
Yeah. But just then.
That was a, what a sound.
Yeah.
Used beautifully in Buffalo 66.
Exactly.
Used
Vincent,
really well.
Prince Vince used it, Mike.
Vinnie G.
Vincent Gallo.
Prince Vince.
You don't get it. The only, Mike likes Brown Bunny. The only movie Mike's seen, Vincent Gallo, is 5 minutes of Brown Bunny. And I'm not saying which 5 minutes.
The opener.
The opening 5 minutes. So you had your brother had all these records.
So he had all these records. But he also had David Live, David Bowie record.
Sure, which was at the Tower Theater?
Yep.
Yes.
And so I guess that's, David Live's like 75?
I think so, right?
I'm about 6 years old.
Okay.
And he points to this record. We're in his room. And it's the beginning of like the rumblings of punk rock.
Mm-hmm.
So 76, maybe 77, but I think 76.
Okay.
And my brother, and I'm like asking my brother questions about the bands, you know, and I was like, because I just wanted to know. And when he would let me sometimes just sit in his room while he was listening to records, and I could just, if I didn't say anything, I could hang out and listen to records, which is a pretty cool thing mm-hmm. when you're six and your 16-year-old brother is hanging out listening to records.
Oh, yeah. That's like the Autobahn now for getting up to speed.
Yeah.
You've got this fast lane.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have bigger fast lanes, which I will elucidate. Sure. But at this point, he's playing, you know, he points to David. He's flipping through his records, and he points to David Letterman. He goes, you know, people are talking about punk rock. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the first punk rocker, my brother says. It's something about the cover was terrifying to me. He looked like a weird, girlish ghost. And I was really, like, I found it really compelling, and it freaked me out. Mm-hmm. Like, I was kind of afraid of it. The way that I was afraid of, like, Sleestaks or something. Like, you know, irrationally kind of spooked by something. And, which, by the way, Sleestaks, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. The Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. Atlanta.
What's scary about a thing that moves really slowly and can't do anything? Like, they're really slow.
I think part of what's scary about them is that you can't communicate with them.
Yeah, and they just...
They're just coming after you, yeah. And you can't say, like, hey, but please, just realize me and my kid got in this raft.
I'm
and
totally cool with Sleestaks. I'm fine with you guys. We're out of here in a minute. Just let me
get my
stuff.
We were just on a raft, and we went down a waterfall, and we had to just let us get out. Well, no harm, no foul, guys. We're just like, and they're just going, or whatever.
trying to kill you. Anyway, so I was afraid of that. And then, so when I still think I'm six, and I was allowed to buy 2 7-inch records. I had a plastic record player that I inherited from my sister, like mm-hmm. as a hand-me-down. Because mm-hmm. I think she was 5 years old and she got a stereo.
Okay.
And got like Kansas and stuff like that. So I was like.
Bad Prague.
Yeah.
Not U.S.
Jesus,
Prague.
Jesus Prague.
There's no such thing as U.S. Prague. Mm. There's U.S. art rock.
Right. But yeah, I think you're right. I'll buy that. But so I went to the record store, and what I wanted was, I got the 2 singles. I got Alone Again Naturally by Gilbert O'Sullivan.
Sure.
Because it was the 70s and I was a sensitive mm-hmm. kid.
Yeah.
And I got Fame by David Bowie.
Okay.
Because I remembered my brother had the...
Yeah.
And the vocal on Fame scared me.
Yeah.
The diving, fame, yeah. All that stuff. And I would have been a huge Beatles fan also, but mm-hmm. I didn't know that John Lennon was on it. For some reason, I just thought of it as David Bowie.
Yeah.
And it took me till way, way later to piece that together. But those are my first 2 records. Mm-hmm. But my best friend Griff across the street, his brothers all had really deep, weird record collections. Mm-hmm. His oldest brother was into like New Wave and had like the Knack.
Okay.
Like, and the Go-Go's. His, mm-hmm. his brother Glenn, who was the second oldest, was really into like scum rock, like really into like the Stooges and the Dolls and the Dead Boys mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then his Grant, the third brother, mm-hmm. Was really into like Sabbath and Iron Butterfly and like more into like acid rock.
Yeah.
And so like go to their house and whichever room we were walking by was like a total education. So we were running around
house.
It was the coolest house
ever existed.
Yep. And we would go listening to, mm-hmm. I remember when we were like little kids, we were running around playing, you know, gun. We didn't have toy guns. We had pieces of wood that we pretended were guns. We're shooting each other, singing Iggy Pop's Dog Food. We just thought that was really funny. It was like, uh-huh. I'm living on dog food. Like we didn't know that it wasn't more popular, as popular as other things.
That is, yeah. So you had a good...
real lucky.
Yeah. Well, so what would be the first thing, though? Can you think of a thing that only made sense to just you, though, where even those kids didn't want any part of it? Like, where you knew you were kind of on your own path now.
That's a tough one. Because... the kids that I grew up with, it took me a while to realize that I grew up with some pretty open-minded kids. So, like, you weren't really alone. Like, you were listening to, you know, like, I liked the B-52s, and mm-hmm. so did other of my friends.
Yeah.
And what was the first thing that I was by myself with? But even, no matter what it was, there was at least some other friend of mine mm-hmm. who was down with it.
Yeah. Well, I gotta say this. You had an experience very different from everyone else.
No,
who liked this stuff.
I know this. I have to tell you, like, Nancy from the band, when I described where I grew up, she was like, that's not real. And it's real. Like, I grew up in upside down town. Like,
yeah, that's
it. First of all, I was mm-hmm. a really big kid.
Mm-hmm.
and really like fey, like, mm-hmm. you know, I wore eyeliner and stuff and nail polish and, but mm-hmm. I was also just huge. So mm-hmm. I didn't get messed with really.
Yeah.
And I could fight cause I'd grown up in this kind of farmy town and I grew up fighting. So like, you know, I wasn't just a big kid. I was a big kid who knew how to fight. And so my experience of like the universal experience of like being an early punk rock kid, mm-hmm. I understood from movies, mm-hmm. but like I didn't experience it in my life so much. Yeah. Like it was like a different, like
a refracted experience.
Like, I could see that how punk rock kids would get picked on.
Yeah.
But they weren't.
Not in your bubble.
No.
You were in
and I just had a couple, I had some good friends. I mean, there's some dummies, but I had just good friends who were like down to listen to some stuff, you mm-hmm. know, like, you know, like I was like, oh, well, you said, what would you like that other people didn't like? And I remember I liked the Psycho Candy when the, you know, and mm-hmm. Upside Down and,
sure.
Vegetable Man and stuff when the Jesus and Mary Chain came out. But there was definitely friends of mine who were totally
somebody,
down.
Yeah. Because I can say from my experience, I remember must have been freshman year of high school, wearing a Madness shirt to school because I had just seen Madness at the Pier with opening was Ministry, open to the Arista.
Wow.
Era Ministry.
Yes, indeed. Big fan of the Arista era. I was a big fan.
I saw that. I saw I saw them at City Gardens then Twitch would have been the album. I saw mm-hmm. that and I was like, I think
I saw that too.
They're different now.
Yes.
Yeah. Now they're super, I'm scared at this show. But I remember wearing my Madness shirt to school and getting punched. Because
I feel guilty for not having had this experience.
Well,
I have survivor's guilt.
Don't.
I have punk rock survivor's guilt.
I got punched and made fun of because the drummer in Madness, his drum set was nowhere near as big as Neil Peart's drum set. I remember just like, well, it just shows that this is some sort of like inferior band where it's just like, you know, I actually could put together the biggest drum set anyone's ever seen. It's just money can build a bigger drum. But, yeah. But tell that when you get punched in the hallway that's what it was like for a lot of people.
No, I know. I've come to learn that mm-hmm. That people from your planet were punched.
Yes, we would get kind of knocked around. So you took your trips to New York, you took your trips to Philly.
Yep.
And then you were also, you were a sound man at Maxwell's.
I was a sound man at Maxwell's, a sound man at Brownies.
Todd Abramson
yep.
told me to say hi.
Oh, really? That's very nice. And tell him to save me some peanut butter pie or whatever.
He wanted to know, isn't sure what you're up to these days, but he wishes you the best.
I really loved that job. It was like 50 or 75 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I would take the path was a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd feed you. Like you had like a menu and you couldn't have any of the really high ticket items. Yeah. Not that there were particularly high ticket items at Maxwell's, but you could have below the line. Like you could have the French dip or whatever.
Sure.
But you could also, and you weren't supposed to, I think, have the pie. But if you got to know the servers and mm-hmm. be friends with them, they might stick a finger in a piece of pie and be like, oh, I can't serve this one. It's ruined. It's got a fingerprint.
Oh, I tell you this, Todd's probably right now looking through a Rolodex trying
who
to piece
was
together
it?
Who the waitstaff
pie thieves
from 1997. Who did you do sound for that you remember doing sound for?
The one I remember the best uh-huh. is Alex Chilton.
Okay.
And I remember it best because I was a huge Alex Chilton fan, and B, he was an incredible jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Like
what?
I had shown up super early to soundcheck, to be really, really ready.
Yeah.
And I brought my own microphones. I was brought like nicer mics.
Yeah.
And everybody showed up but him. And the bass player was like, well, it's not here. And, you know, and nobody helped me. Nobody told me what he wanted.
Okay.
Nobody was giving me any indication. Uh-huh. And the bass player, I had a nice mic that I set up for him, and it worked in his voice nicely, and then I got all this other stuff. And then the show starts, and Austin walks in with his guitar without a case and an amplifier, a little amplifier,
okay.
and plops it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I run up, and I mic the amplifier, and I get his microphone up there, and I'm like, okay. And he proceeds to spend the first song berating me. Like, he's like, okay, he's like, the band is vamping through the, you know, whatever the opening number is, like, just kind of like, doom, 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 just over and over. He's like, you know, oh, hey, everybody, I'm really glad to have a oh, sound man, hey, sound man, I can't hear myself. Like, do you think I'm supposed to be up here to sing without hearing myself? And it's like, and like nonstop. Like, I have, I'm still running back to the console. To get it going. Like, he's not been here for sound check or anything like that. Yeah. And he's like, pretty thick, lumpy voice. Sounds pretty bad up here. Maybe, you know, maybe you want to make it sound a little professional, sound man, because this is like, you know, this is not what I came here for. Like, just stream, and people are glaring at me like I'm ruining their experience of Alex Chilton. And, you know, finally, and I'm like taking, he's like, oh, how come the bass player, like, I don't want to be a jerk here, but like, how come the bass player's got a really nice mic? Why am I dealing with this beat up microphone? And I, you know, so I'm fixing, and he just gets more and more aggressive and irate and uncharming about it. Until finally I pick up, there's a talkback mic, and I just turn up only in the monitors and not in the thing. I'm like, maybe you should shut your face, because like, there's a, I got a couple knobs here and you're a metal band. Like, this is what's happening here. Like, I'm in charge of what you sound like, you know, like, this is, don't get off my back, man. And he kind of left me alone, but I went on and played the show.
Yeah.
And then Mike, I did sound for Mike Watt.
Okay.
And their van broke down.
Uh-huh.
And Mike Watt showed up with everybody but the drummer.
Okay.
And grabbed me, and I'd been a huge like Minuteman fan. And grabbed me, and he's like, it's like, hey man, you know, drummer had to stay with the van. You know, show's number one, van's number two. Can you play drums? And I was like, yeah, you know, I can kind of play, I can play drums. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you ready? And I was like, okay. So we're like setting up, and it was an electronic drum kit. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a really weird scene. Uh-huh. And, I was getting ready to play drums, and the drummer, the van got picked up, and the drummer showed up, and they played their show. So I did not play drums with Mike Watt.
So but this is also, now you at this point are revealing this tech. This kind of techie side of yourself.
Very techie.
You're into sound.
Yes. I'm a technical guy.
And you're also into making music at this point, right?
Yes. Well.
Because what was the band? Pony?
I was in Pony and Speed King during the 90s.
Yeah. Because what do I remember? A double 7-inch, a Pony? Was there a double 7-inch?
There was a double 7-inch was the first thing we made, yeah.
How much is that worth? I have that at home.
I think it's worth, I think it's sold originally for $5. I think it's worth $4.50.
So it's gone down.
It's gone down, but it's only gone down. It's, I mean, it's, if it's used, a hit on taking this. A small hit on the Pony.
I should have shorted the Pony.
You definitely should have shorted the Pony.
And I'd be, yeah. So, because you were now you're kind of have a foot in the music world. You decide to be in bands. And,
well, I'd been in bands since I was a kid.
Sure.
But being in bands as a kid, as much as my friends were open-minded and awesome, they didn't play instruments very much.
Well, see, that's the thing that you did that was different then. It wasn't a band that they couldn't relate to. It was making music.
Making music was a bit of a hard
sell. So that's the one thing they couldn't, that put you out on your own.
But I did form bands, but they were always really, they were hard to hold together. Mm-hmm. I put out a cassette. Mm-hmm. In 85 of stuff that I made at home on 4-track.
Okay.
85, 86. And then I made a goth album in 87.
Okay.
In New Jersey.
And what's the goth album?
It's
called?
The band's called Falling Man.
Okay.
Yeah. And the cover is very reminiscent of the early Sisters of Mercy 12s. Like,
okay.
Monochromatic.
Mm-hmm.
Black and white. Black and a color.
See, what if then you would have done this cover for American Dream way back then? Bright blue, Falling Man.
I couldn't afford it. That's you know more. That was a two color process, man.
That's true. So, look, I remember the color green on that Pony single. Am I correct?
Yes,
green. I remember
green
there was
star.
A fair amount of green on
green
that.
Star.
So, you're making music.
Sure am.
Multiple bands. You're just doing everything you can to be involved in music. It sounds like.
Well,
I
felt more comfortable in a support role.
Okay.
I'd been a singing guitar player in high school in my goth band.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to New York, and I decided to take college seriously, so I stopped making music for a while.
And where'd you go to college?
New York University.
Okay, I've heard of that.
Yes.
I went to Middlesex community. It was Middlesex Community College.
MCC.
Point. MCC. Yeah, thank you. They had a lot of hardcore shows there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can say this, but I know I am on the Wikipedia for illustrious alumni. I think you might have some competition.
Illustrious alumni for MCC?
Yeah, and it's me and...
Well, I'm a dropout of NYU, so I don't think I would get any...
Well, it took me many years to get through a two-year college. I was working full-time at the time and would just... Oh, the community college experience, I'm telling you. Rings it out of you.
I had a lot of friends who were at MC Cubed, which was Mercer County Community College.
Okay. They get it. That's a nicer school, though.
Is
than
it?
This one was. Yeah. This was just. Oh. But then again, you're growing up in the shadow of Princeton.
Yeah.
Which is where, you know what? That's where I wanted to go to school my whole life.
Really?
Whole life. Bill Bradley.
Yeah. I didn't. I mean, I hated it.
Because you were right. It
yeah,
was right well,
and
there.
Also because I was born in Princeton, yeah, and I still walked. But I walked around in the town I was born in, like on the street where the hospital where I like popped out,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and I felt like I was intruding, mm-hmm. like I felt unwelcome and uncomfortable. And these kids would show up every year, and they'd walk around in their pajamas. Yeah. You know, like, they were just like, "Oh, I'm in my yard," and like. I'm like, I was born here and I'm holding the door awkwardly and I'm being glared at and I'm uncomfortable. And you're just walking around in your underwear.
Yeah.
And outside. And you've been here for a month.
Yeah. Your town is suddenly, you're a visitor.
It's their
in your
town,
own
yes.
Town.
Their, yeah. I'm a, yeah. I was a townie.
Yeah. You were, I was like, full like town. Breaking away, right?
Break. It was full, I was a cutter.
Yeah. You were a cutter riding your bike all around.
I'll show.
Princeton.
My friend used to scream, dreams are free out of a car window.
So you just wanted out then?
Yeah.
With that as your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't leave after high school. I stayed around for a year and a half.
Okay. And did you ever sneak into any of, like, did they have, like, those...
They had the
those,
eating club the parties.
Eating
I didn't go to
bands playing those?
Yeah, but I didn't know this. Okay, so Pony got hired to play one of these eating mm-hmm. clubs, like the Terrace or the whatever mm-hmm. it's called. And it's 1990-something. I don't mm-hmm. know. It's all meaningless blur. But
yeah.
The guy who's, I look over and there's a poster of all the bands that played here. And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh my God. It's like all the years I've been living here.
Yeah.
All the bands I wanted to see played there.
Yeah.
And I said.
And they would have killed for someone who actually cared about them being there.
And I was just like, I said to the guy, I was like, wow, I can't believe all these shows mm-hmm. happened. You know, like, did you guys put, they had no idea where I was from.
Yeah. And for people who don't know, these eating clubs, Princeton doesn't allow fraternities. But eating clubs are some sort of, not a loophole, where they would have these private things where you go, it's kind of a fraternity, it's like a soft fraternity.
It's a fraternity, but it's the guys singing in Trading Places, Constance Fry, you know, it's a different kind of fraternity. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, but they would book bands and have these like shows and things.
Amazing, and they'd pay really well because they had the money. And so I asked, I said, you know, why? I was like, did you guys put up flyers and stuff? And he goes, oh no, the place would be crawling with townies. And I just instantly just grabbed him by the throat. Yeah. I was like, you're paying a townie tonight. I was like, I wanted to beat him to death.
Uh-huh.
Just on principle, you know, just to live up to what they were afraid the townies would do.
I remember going to see Sebado at one of those eating club shows. They just had a big New York Times article written about Sebado's great band. And they just had Jason Lowenstein just join them. He's like this little kid with them now, like an 18-year-old with them. And they're in this eating club. No one cares. They do the greatest show I've ever seen. And then they go play their big New York Times article show at CBGB's, and they do the most self-destructive show that
really?
Was like they did like the anti show
for
everyone there, and the show that no one saw, they did the most perfect show for nobody.
What record is this? Three.
Okay, this would have been three.
This is when I saw I did sound for them.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't. I actually just went to see them at Maxwell's.
Yeah,
that pair, and I thought they were great.
Yeah, they were great. That was a fun time. It's still a fun time. It's always a fun time if you try to make it. If you care about fun,
if you're
it's
not
always
in excruciating pain, it's a fun time.
That's a good way of putting it. Mike, write that down.
That's another shirt.
I want you put that on a shirt. I want to see you at Brooklyn Steel, Mike, in line at the merch thing. You're going to buy two shirts.
What was the other one?
Record Store Jerk Saved My Life.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And if you're not in excruciating pain, this one might not sell as much. If you're not in excruciating pain,
it's always a good day.
So when does the LCD sound system, when does the concept hit you? Because it hit you first as a recording thing, like the live band was like a theoretical extension of the records.
Well, the first iteration in any form mm-hmm. of LCD sound system came when Pat Mahoney, drummer mm-hmm. extraordinaire of LCD Sound System, and I were playing. He lived with a bunch of other guys in like La Savi Five, mm-hmm. In a what was a former Knights of Columbus hall.
Okay.
And they kind of just like constructed weird rooms out of sheetrock into this big hall, mm-hmm. and they were having a Christmas party okay. where people were playing and things were going to happen. And Britt Walford at the time was living, I think was maybe living with me.
Squirrel Bait.
Yeah. And so Pat and Britt played drums and I played bass.
Okay.
And that was, and it was, since we were talking about it as like a liquid Christmas band.
Okay.
So then we were talking about the Liquid Christmas Display.
Uh-huh.
And then we were LCD. That's where that first came from.
Okay.
And I just saw Britt. We played in Louisville, and I just saw him for the first time in a long time. Hi, Britt.
Mm-hmm. Very talented guy.
Yes, very good drummer.
That was a weird thing when you think about how talented that band of dumb kids were.
Like, really tiny kids. Yeah. The footage of them playing in the basement in Lance Bangs movie.
Yeah.
When they're playing and you're like, oh, the engineer didn't do that at all. That's what those guys as teenagers sounded like. They look like they're about 11.
Yeah. And that Slint thing. I saw Slint. That I was at that Slint show that he had the footage in the New Brunswick.
Right.
I was not at that. They played for an hour. Nobody knew who they were. We're the opening band.
And they played for an hour.
And they played for, like, the opening band. Just like, hey, I think we're going to stretch out. They opened for the band The Blisters, who I was friends with. And they were like, hey, they knew them from Squirrel Bait. They're just like, oh, yeah, the guys from Squirrel Bait, this is their new band. They want to play. And then they're just like, we play a little longer than the opening. Then we came, we're driving around. And then they played for a full hour.
Which people don't realize, that was crazy.
Oh, that's the most insane thing. When no one knows who you are.
Yeah, you play for 25 minutes.
That we're going to stretch out to this degree. And everybody was just locked in on it. So, yeah. So you're with Britt Walford and Pat
That's the first interview. That's sometime mm-hmm. in the 90s. And Gavin Russom did a magic show that night at the same place. And we didn't know each other.
Okay.
But then I guess I started making stuff around 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. 99, mm-hmm. that era, I started just mm-hmm. recording stuff on my own.
And what's the line like when you think of coming out of, I'm going to say ostensibly you're coming out of indie rock in certain ways, mm-hmm. and there was not a lot of love for new wave or for dance things or for anything that wasn't indie rock coming out. So you're kind of adding a whole other element there, and a thing you an entirely different field, genre that you have a love for.
Mm.
And what's the collision of that like?
Well, at the time, it seems funny to even say that it was weird to do, but it was weird to do. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of, I mean, I met Tim Goldsworthy, and we had started working together as DFA. Like, because mm-hmm. he had come over with David Holmes was the first project in the studio, and he had come over to produce and program David Holmes, and we hit it off. So we stayed and we made DFA. Mm-hmm. And he was cool. Like, he was like a cool person. Like, people were like, hey, that guy's cool. And like, would write articles about him, and he was an uncle and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's cool. He's got to be cool. He's an uncle.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they were cool people. Yeah. I didn't know any cool people.
Yeah.
My friends were like Six Finger Satellite and stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Another cool band.
Really, but, you know, cool in retrospect. But at the time, people were like, these guys are weird.
Isn't it amazing? Isn't that some certain things get lost with time? One is that some things were so unpopular.
Yes. Like, staggeringly.
Yes. The idea that a band like Six Finger Satellite, just one of many bands.
Yes. Were the Hydrogen Terrors.
No traction. No one. They didn't move the needle when they would come to town because it was just it's another band coming through.
Right.
Another Providence.
Yeah. I mean, but people would see them, but it was not like, I mean, certainly like Arches of Loaf were moving a lot more units.
Well, that's exactly, and that's the thing. And it's not even like it was a race or anything, but but history kind of blurs
changes that
part
yeah.
of it. That.
That's why when you see a movie about like the 70s, like everybody's listening to, or the 80s, like everyone's listening to cool music. No, they're not.
No.
Like, it's not what was happening.
The music people in the 80s were listening to is music that kind of came out in 1980.
Yeah.
Like, if you ever hear music that came out like literally in 1980 where it's like Little River Band.
Yeah.
And like, it's like just stuff like that that was like still kind of the 70s.
8675309.
Yeah. Like these. Yeah. It was so not cool.
Yeah.
But that part of it, isn't that always amazing when you see certain things?
No, like everybody's listening to Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen or something.
Exactly. Where it'd just be like,
yes. No, they're not.
Yeah. No, those people were listening to maybe Private Dancer by Tina Turner. Maybe. That actually might be even stretching it.
Yeah.
It was probably, well, we talked before the show, is that we were at the same show at Great Adventure.
Yep.
We saw The Fix.
Yes, we did.
Not the Touch and Go. Not one X.
No, the two X's.
The two X.
Of Reach the Beach fame.
Saved by Zero.
Yeah, Saved by Zero was the big one.
One Thing Leads to Another.
That was actually, One Thing Leads to Another. That was the big one.
Yes. They were.
And I have the records after that.
I had the two.
Yeah.
The one that had.
Reach the Beach.
Reach
the
Beach.
And.
Well, there was Reach the Beach wasn't the second one. Didn't they have the one that had Saved by Zero was the first album?
Really?
Had the first, I think, and then Reach the Beach had One Thing Leads to Another on it. I think. Oh, again, if there's only a way to find out.
There was only
these
some
things.
Method.
Yes. So, look, I'm not meaning to talk about The Fix here, but that thing where history.
Yes.
Is interesting. The other thing that's interesting is now that it's so much more accepting of things, the idea of.
Yeah.
It was like a straight up, I was a kid reading rock magazines, and there would be like Led Zeppelin fans and Clash fans.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
This episode is brought to you by the Weather Channel. It's suggested that brands avoid using sound effects in podcast ads. And remember to speak in a chill tone. Well, here's a suggestion for everyday life. Tap into the Weather Channel app. It's loaded with insights that help you manage your allergies, breathe easy, and
use your outside voice.
What in the weather are you waiting for? Be a force of nature with the Weather Channel app.
That was like considered, they were at war with
each
other.
Yeah,
they're
going to have a hammer fight in the street.
Like, the idea that pick what side you're on, man.
Yeah.
Are you with the Clash or are you with Led Zeppelin? Can't like both.
Yeah, you can't. That's impossible. Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, I think I like both. I think I like the Clash. I like this double album. And I also like the Led Zeppelin albums I have also.
Did you see 20th Century Women?
No, I did not.
Okay. There's a really good scene in the film, where a kid, the kind of the kid main character, which we can presume is the director stand-in a way.
Sure.
As what we, it might not be true, but it's what we presume. is at a skateboard like half pipe.
Mm-hmm.
It's in like, it's maybe 1987, okay. Somewhere in there.
Sure, sure.
Wearing a Talking Heads like shirt from the 77 era.
Yeah, no, that's.
And another kid who's a Black Flag fan beats him up. And I said, that's the first time someone's believably acknowledged that you weren't allowed.
You weren't allowed to like both.
To like both. Yes. I mean, I did like both because I grew up in my town was a vacuum of, there were no rules. There was no like, you couldn't be into this. You could be into that. It's like anything weird was okay for me and my friends.
Yeah.
Like, so.
For me, again, just to remind you, Madness shirt.
Punched in the face.
Not the face, the chest.
Ah, well, that's, you know, in the sternum or the chest? Like, knock the wind out of you?
Kind of not the stomach, that thud of the chest of like a scrawny high school student makes your whole body reverberate. Like it's ooh. His fist could have just gone all the way through me.
And you make a sad like,
ooh.
Sad.
Like a, ooh.
Yeah.
It's like, then, yeah. But, just reminding you.
Yeah. No, but that was a thing, you know, and when I became more aware that there were scenes, which I didn't really understand. Like, I'd be like, I'm listening to Ministry, and I'm listening to Black Flag, and I'm listening to the B-52s, and I'm listening to the Violent Femmes, and I'm listening to The Cure. And, like, all this seemed totally appropriate.
Yeah.
And then I got a little older and realized that, like, a bunch of these people hated each other.
Yeah.
And fans of one would loathe fans of the other. And I found, and once I found the first scene that I ever saw was, because I was a, I used to go to City Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
We'd see like hardcore scenes.
Yeah.
And that was really overwhelming for me because for me, like punk rock and all this weird stuff was like, it was really queer. And I don't mean like gay necessarily, but I mean like really queer and like it wasn't like dude stuff. It wasn't macho.
And stuff was so macho on the other side of the street. Like that's the thing. Like hardcore was so macho. Punk was so by that point, what would be punk was super
dude.
Yes,
but to me it was like confusing to me because I was like this feels like there were elements that felt like really football-y, like really like like guys gonna call each other names and beat each other up and stuff like that, and like a lot of homophobic stuff and like you know, and I was like whoa, you know, a minute ago. Like, I was listening to the Smiths. Like, this is weird to be here right now.
Yeah.
I remember calling into a hardcore show and I was quite optimistic and evangelical. And I wanted them to, I called it a hardcore show and I was like, can you play the Smiths' Handsome Devil?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, oh, thank you so much for calling in. You know my show? And I was like, totally. I hear what you're playing and I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think you might like Handsome Devil. It's like Connor Rips. And like, and he's like, oh, okay. Uh-huh. And he like acquiesced to play it, but was like, hey, this was a call-in. Like kind of apologizing for playing the Smiths on the show. But Handsome Devil, Stan Manhattan, that song rips.
I get it completely. Now.
Now everything's
so great. Yeah. But it's so great when you think about the idea that it's just a smear of everything. The idea that like you would get, if you said like, hey, you know, I kind of like these Hall & Oates records.
Yeah.
You'd be just like hunted down in the street. Now that's like considered a cool reference. It's just like, yeah, those are great records.
Yeah.
Hall & Oates records are awesome records.
Yeah.
Look, it's definitely the better version of it is happening now.
Of what?
Of people accepting all different music.
Yes.
But then you were definitely, you found a club and if you had your foot in, or you're in different camps and stuff. I would go buy stupid. I saw like Erasure at the Ritz and all the. I would go see these things and it was just like, I wasn't going back in high school with the talking all about Erasure. Nobody wanted to hear about that again.
Do you remember seeing
the kid with the madness?
Did you remember seeing?
Really, I don't want to know what he would have thought of Erasure.
What do you think? Do you remember the first time you saw? I'm assuming you saw the video for Small Town Boy by Bronski Beat.
Yeah.
And did you ever see it at the time, like on U68 or whatever thing it would have been?
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, I remember how impactful that was.
It was like the saddest thing I'd ever seen.
It blew my mind. Like, it was an amazing, and then we're talking now, people talk now about, like, you know, like, being gay is being, it's coming out and all this. It's like, go check the rest of television when Bronski Beat made that video.
That was a full-on statement that reached, for me, just being a kid in the suburbs and not having anything say that that world was out there. That was the first time I knew that there was, that this is a world and this is the struggle.
Yeah, what a massive thing. I remember seeing that and being like, wow, like that is, that's the, for me, that was like the punkest thing I could imagine. Like, you know, what a, years before people were willing to like be an artist and be like, hey, you know,
yeah,
like,
or just be able to identify wherever they identify.
Yeah.
And now, but then it was just like, the default setting was that you're just like a, you're just going to be like a straight kid if you're in the suburbs.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like the, it was a very.
A different time. It was a different time.
It really was a different time.
And so, I think people want to say that it's, it was better then because you went through hardship. So you feel like everyone needs to be punished with your bad stuff.
That's,
but people do. They're just like, well, it was hard. You know, I got kicked in the nuts all the time for what I listened to. You should be kicked in the nuts too. Like, no, that was terrible.
You're better off not getting kicked in the nuts.
That's people being terrible to you because of things is not good.
It doesn't,
doesn't imbue strength.
Yeah, exactly. It just makes. Just puts more bad stuff in the world.
It just makes you scared when someone taps you on the shoulder to ask if you want popcorn at the movie.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah.
Now, Madness.
Yeah. No. Look. Okay. I'll go buy the guy in Madness some Rototoms.
Yeah.
How about that? I have some Christmas money. What if I go?
Get 17 splash symbols of different sizes.
I'll go get him. The China Boy High. I'll go get him a 22-inch.
China Boy High.
Yeah.
That sounds like a... autobiography of one of the
doubles. It sounds like a China Boy High, the story of
Sylvain Sylvain.
Yes. So James Murphy, you, not to just keep staying in the past.
Sorry.
I love it too.
It's fun to talk.
I love it.
For another fellow Jersey, fellow Fix fan.
And the thing is just to one thing from the people, when you mentioned City Gardens, this is a thing people, that another thing that's lost to time. City Gardens was in Trenton, New Jersey, which was a terrifying city, like a real rough
it was
city.
A terrifying street with a terrifying club in a terrifying city.
Yes. It was a black box dropped in like an industrial area where they
off of the highway.
It seemed like where they were stripping cars, they would steal cars, and this is where they would repaint them or strip them for parts.
It would be a lawless net of impunity. Yeah, you could do whatever you wanted there. There was nothing.
And you'd park your car there and you would
with other people.
Yeah. And you just, you could never walk back to your car alone.
You do not go into the parking lot alone. That's rule number one.
It was so terrifying. But everybody played there because it was a show that they could do between Philly and New York. So you'd get all these bands playing there. What shows do you remember at City Gardens?
Well, my first show of any kind ever was a City Garden show of the Ramones.
Okay.
And that was, it was amazing. And also I was stunned by how traditional the songs were. Mm-hmm. I remember feeling. You know, both the Ramones and the Sex Pistols, that my first experience of them was that they were not as weird as I thought they would be, but awesome. And my second show was Iggy Pop, and they were the same week.
So you were at City Gardens twice in 1 week.
Yeah, when I was pretty little.
Yeah.
And then I became a bouncer there.
So you were a bouncer at City Gardens.
Yeah, in the late 80s.
And what's it like being a bouncer at City Gardens?
I thought, my parents didn't like me going there, but they didn't know the half of it. And
My parents had no idea. If they would have known that that's what that place was.
Yeah.
Because there's also no way of searching that.
Yeah, either. You couldn't Google City Gardens and be like, you know, cross-reference murder.
Yeah.
You know, like City Gardens / murder.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was what punk clubs were like. This is what this is what I thought everyone had to deal with to go to a punk show. And they made a documentary a few years ago where they interview all these pretty hard bands who had pretty rough reputations. And they're all like, City Gardens, like that was the scariest place. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, like I was a pretty, like, I was a pretty naive, you know, goofy kid from a little town. And I was like, Mom, what are you worried about? I'm just going to the show. Everybody goes. It's no big deal. And I never, luckily I didn't say the facts and I didn't even know to hide them. I was like, we don't go in the parking lot alone. Nobody would do that.
It's like,
but that's just, you shouldn't go to a place where you, where you absolutely cannot go to the parking lot by yourself.
The idea of going to the park and going back to your own car.
Yeah.
Is somehow foolhardy.
Yeah. Like you go when the show is over with everybody else.
Yeah. And now it's like, that's actually kind of lets you know what like, you're like, we're dudes. It's like, that's like, what women go through.
That's just called life. That's like a Wednesday.
But it's like when, like that's the only time I think I've experienced what, like, I think like women, when they're scared going places, it's like, I'm lucky enough to be a big guy also, that wasn't a thing. And but that City Gardens, man, that was some scary stuff. So do you remember bouncing people as a bouncer?
I had to bounce a guy. I've This isn't the first time I've told this anecdote, but I was a kickboxer, mm-hmm. and my kickboxing coach, Juan del Castillo, mm-hmm. was also the head bouncer or something. He was like one of the main bouncers at City Gardens. And so when he needed people, he would just grab people from the Tang Soo Do class. Like, hey, can you want to be a bouncer at the club? Yeah.
Okay.
Just don't tell him you're 18 or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you had to be 21. And I mean, I'd been going there for years, but I just looked older. I was like a big guy. So, you know, and it was also that back then they didn't really care about carding you.
No, nobody cared. Just like, just don't be stupid.
Yeah. Like, don't just you'd get, keep like, your head thing. Down. Yeah.
I remember at City Garden, some guy just like, just don't drink. Okay. I'm like, I don't know. I just want to see the band. It's like, okay, just go. Like
Randy. Yeah. But they, I started bouncing there, and like okay, there were rules. You couldn't wear Doc Martens with white or red laces. You could only enter in mm-hmm. with Doc Martens with black laces if you had Doc Martens or combat boots. You couldn't wear suspenders.
Okay.
Because we had so many fights with skinheads.
Yeah.
Like just coming in and beating, just in groups and beating people up.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Way to go. Mm-hmm. And so there were all these people that weren't allowed in because they'd already been thrown out. And mm-hmm. one of these guys, this massive guy, and my coach, instructor, head bouncer guy, the rule was if he gave you this little like,
flick of the nose
a la Bruce Lee, mm-hmm. then that guy's hit people or headbutted people without provocation and you should drop him.
Okay.
Now, you weren't allowed to haul back and punch anybody. You'd get in mm-hmm. big trouble. So what you had to do was like place your hands on their chest, like, hey, mister, hey, we gotta, you know, we mm-hmm. hey, take it easy, and find their sternum. The little place.
Sure. And I'm familiar. The guy with the Neil Peart fan showed me where my sternum was.
And you just do a little quick punch, mm-hmm. short punch shot to the sternum. And that usually knocks the wind out for a second, mm-hmm. where at which point one or you or one other guy, we'd throw them. There was a back door in the back bar of City Gardens. There was the whole front area and there was the back bar.
Yeah.
The back bar, I think, is where Jon Stewart would bartend.
Yes.
And we would just open the door. Mm-hmm. Throw the guy into the street, into the parking lot.
Okay.
Alone.
Okay.
And yell, get out of here, racist, and mm-hmm. other things. But you make sure to yell skinhead racist, mm-hmm. because that would mean he would likely barely escape the parking lot with his life.
Yeah.
Because people would just come out of the woodwork and beat him senseless.
Yeah. That's like, he's like chum now.
Yeah. You just literally throw the brave racist with his 30 friends alone into the Trenton parking lot.
Yeah.
So that's what you did. You just throw them out and then you never had to beat anybody up. They got beat up.
So now you, 2017.
2017 me, 47 year old man.
Sound system. You're playing shows.
Yes, I am.
And you look at the kids in the crowd, mm-hmm. and they're like, when it's getting hot and heavy,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
It's like it's going nuts. And then you're just like, are you ever just like, that's not nuts, guys? Like, I've seen nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts should be, one of your heads should be rolling across the floor, detached from your shoulders.
No, because I think by the time I was being kicked in the face in the middle of a pit at City Gardens, it was already retro. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? But like, I experienced no like genuine mosh pit from the 70s. Like, yeah. I didn't gob on
Nobody
people.
Was gobbing. Yeah. We all missed gobbing.
Yeah. And I'm not sad. And like, for the most part,
can you imagine that?
It was, yeah, it's just being spit on.
Look, you could.
Just nobody likes that.
Your biggest problem are these stupid cell phones.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if your biggest
John Lydon's getting gobbed
getting
on?
Gobbed on. If you're just like, look, everyone.
Or you're Iggy Pop and you get hit in the head with a bottle.
Yeah, please. Or you're like in the 70s when they'd be at concerts, you'd be like, kids would go to concerts like.
Rip up the seats and throw them at the street.
Michael, yeah, that. Or you'd go and be like, hey, you know, my favorite band is Aerosmith, so I think what I'm going to do is throw this M80 at them. I'm going to see if I can blow up my favorite band. It's like the mentality. But you're just like looking at, you see cell phones. You also could, it also could just be, look, I'm glad it's where it's at now. And also, put the cell phone, that cell phone thing is, look, when I see you guys, will I take a picture when the disco ball goes off? Yes, because you can't see that. I'm at the back of the room. The lights have changed. You're not looking at my phone. I'm a quarter of a mile away from you.
Actually, that's the easiest time to see people with their phones.
Is when the ball goes up.
Because there's zero lights in our eyes.
But I'll go all the way in the back.
All right, I know, I get it. I'm not trying to draconianly ruin people's memory making.
You're wrong. You're not wrong. That's the thing. I'm on your side. I go see a thing and then people start. It's like the tide is turning with the cell phone thing.
People have been really amazing about it. I've seen a lot fewer now.
Yeah.
Because I think people are getting the recognition that they're not going to watch their crappy, distorted cell phone video.
And that all you maybe need is one picture to show you were there, and you take it, and then you can put it away for the rest of the night.
Nobody believes you anymore. You need proof. Do I need to sell buttons that say I was there? Would that just be too on the nose?
Maybe that's another thing. So we're just redoing the merch table now.
We always used to joke that we should make like really hack corny merch. Like he's losing his edge with an arrow to the guy next to you. Like just really like really wrong headed.
Yeah.
You know.
Then you'd be.
Daft Punk is playing at my house! ! Like just
that's so.
It'd just be like in bubble letters.
That would be, yeah. Look, someone else is going to start making. You're going to.
Do you think they don't already? Just you know.
Oh, I'm sure they look.
It's at the corner of Google and iPhone. You can find all that stuff.
You find a lot of bad merch. Look, you can see in the front of my computer. Look at that.
I saw. I was wondering if that was our mall.
Yes, it is. Nice. I taped it on there. It wasn't a sticker. It was from something. I don't know what.
I dig it.
So
it's hard to move forward with us. We're just going to, you know.
Just watch this. Watch how I do this. Now it's 2000. Let's say it's 2000. When do you pull the plug on the band? 2012?
2011. Actually, technically, say plug pulled 2010.
Okay.
Plug drain, water drains out 2011.
In April of 2011.
Yes.
At what point in that, what point did the concept of ending this thing dawn on you?
It had been going on since the making of Sound of Silver. Like I'd been, there was a lot of me just being like, this is the last thing.
Sure.
And while making This Is Happening, I kind of felt like I was signed to EMI. Mm-hmm. And they were not making a good amount of money on me. I think, they were doing fine. But, we were not going to recoup. We were not going to be. And they were going to have to pay more for the next record.
Mm-hmm.
And so it dawned on me that This Is Happening is probably, I was like, we're never going to get paid to make a record again. This is it. That's why we rented a mansion in Los Angeles. Like, we were like, let's do it. This is our last chance to be like, you know, have some weird 70s recording experience,
So you get the mansion.
So we get the mansion, we do it. And I was like, so I was already kind of like, this is a swan song in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
And do you feel like that's coming out, not to cut you off, do you feel like that's coming out of you growing up or with like the idea that there were so many bands in indie rock and just that they would just be like in and then they would be out.
Well, no, I just feel like, okay, I really like Pill,
mm-hmm.
but I really love the first three records.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I really like the Talking Heads,
mm-hmm.
but like, I really love Up Through Remain in Light. You know what I mean? And I really like Speaking in Tongues as well. But, you know, like, it's hard to keep making music at, like, your best place. That's one thing.
Okay.
Two, I never liked the idea... This is going to sound weird. The way American bands work, the way bands work in America, I would say, is if you stick to it, even a very unlikely band can be very big.
Mm-hmm.
R.E.M., like, yeah. you know, like, you sure. just, like, R.E.M. became one of the biggest bands in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to call that at Reckoning.
No.
You know what
no,
I mean? Like, we weren't going to, like, this was a pretty weird band.
Yes, that every time out, they took a big step
yes.
forward.
The Cure were an enormous North American touring concern.
Yeah.
The U2.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the, you know, the most likely success story.
No, the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes, the Chai Peps.
They have somehow, they are.
They're like the Rolling Stones.
Yes. They are an American mm-hmm. institution.
Yeah. You keep.
Because they didn't
break
go
up.
Away.
Yeah, you keep doing it. And you get bigger. You know, in England, it's different. I think if you have to keep changing, you have to keep, you know, mm-hmm. moving and shifting, or everyone just goes, ah, you know.
There's only so much ground to cover also.
Yeah. So I was like, and people around us were like, oh, the next record's going to be a big record.
Okay.
And that made me very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It made me very uncomfortable to feel like I'm a competitive person by nature. I kind of want to be challenged. I like being an underdog. I enjoy, you know.
So New Jersey.
Yeah. Joyce. And so the idea that like all we had to do is not screw up
mm-hmm.
and make another record, which would likely be not quite as good,
mm-hmm.
you know, tired, touring, you know, blah, and it would be bigger.
Just by the force
by the sheer force of other bands breaking up and getting mm-hmm. into fights and falling apart and us being like the last one standing. I found really depressing and unmotivating.
Okay.
And, I mean, similar to like, you know, when I graduated from high school, most of the kids in my school went to college. I didn't want to go because it just felt like, why do I want to do just what's expected? Like what's next? Like what? These are supposed to be important decisions. It's like, I don't want to marry the person who's my girlfriend because I'm a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you want to have something special happen.
Sure, and you've always kind of questioned that the patterns of things.
Yes, that's how I think about stuff. So for me, it was just like by breaking up the band, like something. I felt like something really good would come of that. Like that was like the right thing to do. I could move on with my life, and mm-hmm. before we got successful, and I became like, well, maybe I need all this money like that we're getting now that we're big, you know, like all this kind mm-hmm. of stuff. I didn't want to live a life like that. I'd always been rented an apartment. It was fine, you know. I had reasonable economic needs, you know. It just felt like that would make more sense. And I know that sounds a little kooky, but it made sense to me at the time.
It makes sense. And the another part that is that you certainly, when you started, you did not get into it with money as the prime motivator.
Here. No, I remember there was a couple, you know, people on the internet,
mm-hmm.
POTI, potties.
Sure.
And there was like, oh, this is like all a play for money. And I'm like, who gives up their primary source of income as a big play for money?
Yeah.
You know, we lost a fortune at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. You know, like we didn't charge enough for the tickets. We didn't make anything. We spent mm-hmm. way more on production and building these stupid spaceships and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It was a bloodbath. But it was like what we wanted to do. We were all mm-hmm. like totally psyched about it.
Yeah.
But making music didn't become a thing that earned more than it cost until I was 35 years old. And I'm not saying that as that's like a bad thing. I was quite happy. Like I made music, making music was my, like the thing I wanted to do. And so like I had a job that I could pay my bills with that I would use that money to make music. Like that was what that's how I associated with music. So like the idea of it like being a career that late in my life felt very weird.
Yeah, because that,
if I was 19 and we were like, kaboom, I'd be like, yeah, I deserve this. This is, where's my other bag of money and stuff?
Because right off the bat.
Where's my cocaine fountain?
You're coming, yeah. Cocaine fountain. You can. Mike?
Where's the cocaine fountain?
Where's James's cocaine fountain?
You got the rider, right?
He said it's in Bayonne. He'll show it to you after the show. I would not do.
You had to go with like in three different cars.
Yes. It's down this road. Come on. It'd be like, come on. It's over here.
You got $150, right? You got $150 bucks in cash, right?
For the cocaine fountain. Turn it on.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, you're coming at this. You're a little older than the
average bear.
The average bear.
Yeah.
So you're coming at it with a different perspective on
worldview.
Yes. You've got a different worldview. And there's a thing that like, when you think of, like, Francis Coppola, a guy like that.
Frankie C.
His goal was...
Frankie C. Town.
I love his low-rent grocery store. He was always just like, the only point in having money is to use the money.
Yeah.
And that's why he would always go broke.
Yeah.
And then, but then would go direct another thing and then wouldn't be broke.
Right.
He could always just ride the ride.
Yeah.
And it would go up and then it would go down.
Right.
But his whole thing was, this is literally the only reason for me to try to make money. Why would I want money if I'm not going to use it?
To do something.
To make more of what I got in this in the first place.
Right. Because people forget, I think life is funny. And you think you need, like, people start talking about, like, oh, I need. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, you don't want to live forever. I lived for a couple of years in an inflatable mattress in the studio. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do that forever. I'm not saying that it doesn't matter. I'm just saying, like, if you want money, don't be a musician.
No.
It's a terrible idea.
There are so much better plays to get your hand on money. You could just sell aluminum
banking.
Siding.
Be in banking.
Yeah.
If you want money, be in finance.
Yeah. If I wanted to make money, you know what I would do?
Yeah.
Do a home repair, landscaping. I don't even know how to fix anything. I would schedule the guys, and they would show up when people told them. And if you did that, you'd have more money than you'd ever know what to do with.
Yeah, you stand in the middle between people who need stuff and people who provide
stuff. And you just send the people there reliably. And you will be standing on a pile of money. There's so many better ways to get money than the entertainment field.
Yes.
It's the dumbest way to try
it
to get rich.
It really is.
So that's how you get to the decision. And then you're kind of...
And it'll feel cleaner to be done.
Because
I'll know, like, okay, I've, which is kind of cowardly, but it was like a little bit like a little self-destruction.
At what point... Did the notion of bringing the band back enter your head?
Well, I had a balloon payment on my condo. No,
sure, that would do it.
I did a bunch of stuff that I was really happy to do and really proud of and excited.
And that's the band not being this
all-encompassing animal that eats your life. Yeah.
Now you're. Well, how about this? As soon as the final show.
Yeah.
The dust settles, you actually get your feet back under you.
Yeah.
After the kind of the vibrations of that settle down, how did you feel in the wake of that?
Great. I felt tremendous. You know, I had time. I still had all the friends in my band. Like, it's not like, people disappeared. I got to do other projects. Like, I got to, like, do things I wouldn't normally be able to do. I got to build the Despacio sound system. I got to like make a restaurant. I got to score a Mike Nichols play. I got to make music for a Mike Nichols play.
Yeah.
Like, so I got to hang out with Mike Nichols.
Yeah.
One of the greatest American artists.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a real, a guy who was probably at the show we were talking, the Shrapnel show we were talking about earlier.
That he would have been at that show with Kurt Vonnegut. And
yeah.
Norman Mailer.
Yeah.
Woody Allen.
Yeah. He would have been there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, and he's also somebody who, not unlike you, if he can, he would pursue whatever he was interested in. He would actually go toward it and not say, oh, I'm this. I can't go do that. If you're interested in it, let me see my what my
take on it is.
And then well, what, film how I can relate to
people
it.
Didn't believe he could do film.
Yeah, no, that was, he came to that.
And then what made, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and The Graduate.
Yeah.
1-2 punch.
Yes. After doing Nichols and May.
Yeah.
That it was like, hey, you know that guy who does the two-person improv stand-up routine thing? Yeah, it's like, he's going to do...
Definitely the most, you know, one of the biggest, most important names in American film. For sure.
Yeah.
That's coming.
And so you, yeah, so you, but you got to work with him, which you would not have been able to do if
Never
the band wasn't.
No, it just wouldn't have been possible.
So you're trying everything out. You're trying restaurant. You're trying... scoring, you're doing the every little bit of everything, some producing.
Had a baby.
You had a baby.
Yeah.
You got to be tight bros with the guy on that record you were staring at as a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Now you're actually knowing that guy.
That's weird.
Yeah. That is weird.
It was very weird.
That's always weird.
You know what was weirdest about it?
What's that?
Not that weird.
That it wasn't that weird.
That it wasn't that weird. And that is down to that. I always say this tough thing because it's like, what's worse than if I would just say like, well, David, you know what I mean? Like, like casually.
Sure.
It's David Bowie. And I'd say it not being weird is down to how incredibly gracious that dude was. Like how amazing at making you feel normal around him.
Which is a thing he must have learned.
That's a skill, yeah.
To just, it's like, if I ever hope to have a normal conversation
I'm
ever again
have
in my life.
I'm going to learn to let people know that that you don't have to avoid, you don't have to feel uncomfortable about being an enormous fan. It just disarmed me. Like, completely disarmed. And a lot of people told the same story. They'd be like, yeah, you just, like, call me up someplace. I'm like, hey, I thought about you because you were really into this furniture designer, and I'm in this place, and they have a bunch of it, and I just wanted to let you know. And you'd be like, this guy thought about me. And, like, it immediately disarm you.
Yeah. And it's – but I guess that's, like, a self-preservation thing for him. Otherwise, he's going to be – he's going to have no one to talk to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I also think it was, like, a generosity – I think it was a generosity. Like, just, like – let's get through this bit now.
Yeah.
And you now then we can then you can just be at ease more and know that I'm not gonna freak out if you're like, I really love Ziggy Stardust. You know, like I mean the first thing I said to him was like we met I was recording him for Arcade Fire and he walked in and I introduced him, I was like, oh, this is James. He's like, oh, hello. He's kind of normal, very polite, but hello. And we recorded some vocals and he went away and the next day he came back to do more and he walked in and he kind of pushed it out of the way and he's like, I'm so sorry. I had no idea it was you. I just, of course it was you, but I just, you know, when you were introduced and he was like apologizing to me for not recognizing my greatness or like, you know, or like who I was. And I'm like, you were totally nice. And as far as I'm concerned, totally appropriate for our, who we are. Yeah. And he said, I'm an enormous fan of your work. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, if you know anything about my work, you know I'm an enormous fan of your work because I steal from you liberally. And he just leaned into me and he went, you can't steal from a thief, darling. And I'm like, oh, that's just in the holster?
Yeah.
Like, you just have that. That's just ready to go.
Ready
like, that
to
was,
go.
That Let's was your, go. You can't, like a little wink God. And you can't steal from a thief, darling. And I'm like, that's... I mean, that's a good opening gambit. You write that in a film, people are like, well, things don't normally work like that. But it's like, that's actually...
Yes, you are in a movie for that.
Someone so charming that it's invisible. It's like a great waiter that you don't even know they're there.
That is...
Your food just happens.
Yeah, that is like...
Smooth.
Yeah. Yeah? Oh, my God.
But not even smooth. There's no sliminess to smooth. It's just literally just super on it. Like... Mm-hmm. Just super ability to make you feel like,
Like, mm-hmm. we're just two friends laughing about this, isn't sure. it? Ha ha ha. I just told you that I steal from you because you're mm-hmm. one of my heroes yeah. of all time.
Yeah.
And you've made a little joke about how we all steal, don't we? Us mm-hmm. artists. Ha ha. And I'm like, And so you just, so if mm-hmm. you manage not to have your head explode mm-hmm. and shoot yourself in the bathroom, yeah. then you start to have a friendship.
The one thing I've always felt bad about is, and I don't know how to bring this up, is I'm the one who threw that lollipop at him.
What?
At that show.
What are you talking about?
When he got hit in the eye with the lollipop, that was me.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Okay, good.
Horrible confession. I'm the reason he stopped like going on stage was he got hit in the eye with a lollipop. I threw.
Oh.
It was a really good lollipop.
And but you just were like, I hear it. It's so good.
You're going to love this lollipop. So now he actually encouraged you to get the band back together. Is that a thing
well,
I heard somewhere?
It's less direct than that. I was talking to him around the Black Star time, mm-hmm. and I had gone to my wife and said, like, hey, I have a little issue. I started writing music, mm-hmm. and I realized I've amassed a lot of music, and uh-oh, you know, there's a complication. You know, it's like if we were writing a scene, here's the conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had already spoken to Pat and Nancy and been like, hey, I'm writing music and I'll play some things for you. And like, I don't know what to do because we broke up this band kind of publicly.
there was a public component
there was an announcement-y mm-hmm. type yeah. component.
It was a kind of a movie
yeah,
that
was
kind of came out.
A thing.
Yeah.
It was a really big event. So the mm-hmm. largest thing my band did ever yeah. was break up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, uh-huh. so that's a complication. And my wife was, I was like, well, I don't, you know, so I was like, I can't, maybe I just shouldn't record music. And she's like, you have an amazing recording studio that you built with your hands mm-hmm. and you make, it's a little embarrassing. Like she knows me well enough to be like, yeah, what would your 15-year-old self say if you weren't using your studio when you had songs to record?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a good point. And I talked to Pat and Nancy. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, I made this music. I'm making this music. And like, what do you guys think? It's like, if you think it's LCD Sound System, then it's LCD Sound System. But if it's not, you know, then I'll have to figure something else out because it's like, yeah. that's fine. Because mm-hmm. I couldn't go on stage with a bunch of 24-year-olds and be like, hello, it's LCD. You know, like,
that would be
the best and worst
that would
thing
be the
ever
funniest
in
thing.
Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nor if I had made like a solo record.
Yeah.
I couldn't have them play because people would be like, what the hell is
yeah, yeah.
you know, he's just such an egomaniac that he had to just, me being me was not enough. Yeah. It now has to be even more me. Yeah.
And you'd be up there like, I think you all might know this one. Yeah. You're just like, yeah. like where you're giving them like the dessert after they hear all the, like, you go, you guys eat all your vegetables, which is my new stuff. I think you might remember this one. And then everybody surges forward finally.
I've been saying this at shows. We've been like, when we played some new songs, and I kept saying to people, it's like, we're going to play a couple new songs. People are like, wow. And I'm like, don't get excited. Yeah. You don't uh-huh. want to hear these. You think you do.
Uh huh.
You think what you want to do right now mm-hmm. is hear new songs. Halfway through the second song, you're like.
Introducing Batiste Sweat Activated and Touch Activated Dry Shampoo. With breakthrough technology that absorbs oil and releases bursts of fragrance whenever you sweat or touch your hair for up to 24 hours, it's the ultimate hair care for girls on the go. Try the newest dry shampoo that's activated by you. Batiste, the future of hair care is here. Buy Batiste Dry Shampoo online or in store at your nearest retailer.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
You know, like, it's, I don't know this. Like, this means like, nothing to me.
Like,
and not like O Vienna, but this literally means mm-hmm. nothing to me. Like, and I, so we kept announcing, I'm like, just
for
be
people
cool
playing
with
the,
it.
Uh, the Best Show bingo game, you can now mark off the Ultravox one on it. There goes that. Somebody might have just hit bingo on with the Vienna quote.
Yeah.
It's such a. But do you see people's relationship with those? Did you see them change once the two songs dropped, and then you see people actually taking ownership of them? And
yes, which I liked. I liked, and I respect that. Like mm-hmm. you know, we on the last record when we started touring, we purposely did not play "Dance Yourself Clean" because mm-hmm. I was like, it's too much of a mouthful unless people really know it.
Yeah,
and then by the time we played it, people were like. I could read online that people were angry that we weren't playing it.
Sure.
And then we got it together to play it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there was something to do. Like, I respect that relationship. It's not mm-hmm. like, I'm going to come out and play the new record, everybody. Hold on to your hats.
Yeah.
And what I mean is, while you leave,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's, yeah. it's, you know, it's, yeah. you're there to play people, you know, what you, I mean, you've already playing your own music. So, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. like, people that complain, like, I can't believe we have to play this. It's like your song. Like, it's your yeah. fault that it's there. Yeah. It's,
yes. It's, you
made
did
it.
All of that.
Like, the complaint is which egomaniacal thing that you made for yourself that you have to play for people who like you band and pay money to mm-hmm. look at it with their eyeballs and ears.
So not to lose track. So Pat and Nancy are on board. They're hearing the stuff.
They were
and
like, saying, yeah, this yes, is it sounds great. Like. This is great. So. Then I was like, yeah, well, we're going to figure out how to say we're mm-hmm. a band. And I thought we were going to have the record done really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so it would be done right before we played Coachella or right after, and then it would
sure.
be out.
Okay.
I'm really glad it didn't work that way.
Okay.
I'm sure some people are frustrated. It took a long time. But I'm glad we got over – I'm glad we got to deal with playing again. And that being the story for a while.
Yeah.
And then now we're like, okay, people, they're playing. Now there's a record. It's less of like mm-hmm. a thing to me.
No, before, so David Bowie factors into the oh,
yeah.
assembly.
Sorry, I was talking. Sorry, yeah, you're right. Okay, so I was talking to him around the Black Star time. And I was saying like, you know, confiding, because I didn't tell people this. Mm-hmm. And he had made me sign a bunch of confidentiality agreements, mm-hmm. so I was pretty sure he was going to be cool with not,
yeah.
not that anyone was going to be like, so David,
we're hearing something. Like,
we need a quote from you about yeah. LCD sound yeah. system.
Because he's just giving quotes left and right.
Right, and also anyone who has a moment with David Bowie is not going to be asking about my stupid band. Like, unless they're literally
Give
related
us the
to
story.
Me. Yeah, all right.
David, one
Black week. Star, Schmack Star.
Yeah, we get one question. What's up with this LCD sound system thing? We're here and there. Thanks for the quote, David. Clunk.
Yeah. That's not in the cards. No, but he was just like, it makes you uncomfortable. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, good. You know, it should. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not doing it, if you're not making yourself uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Which I thought at the time, I was like, as he was saying it, I'm like, well, I was like, you're not uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then again, that's a stupid thing for me to think, because it's like, you know, I'm looking at David Bowie and I'm like, well, if I could be David Bowie tomorrow, I'd just be walking around like, screw you. Like, you know, like yeah, I can yeah, do whatever
yeah.
I want.
Yeah,
I'm David Bowie. You know, like I would feel like the most confident person in the world. But of course, you know, you get to that through years of like not making Young Americans Again and making Low
yeah, yeah.
and all sorts of things mm-hmm. that made you, if you care about how people feel about you, which no one that's not deeply damaged cares mm-hmm. to some degree about how people respond to the things they make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had to be uncomfortable a lot, and that's probably been the best thing ever for his.
Like I always feel with him where people would just be like, oh, he just changed. It's like, that's the hardest thing in the world.
That's the hardest thing.
He threw it. He was touring Diamond Dogs, and halfway through he crumples it up.
Yeah.
And then puts on like a Panama hat.
And it's the thin white
and
dude.
Suddenly like, this is what we sound like now.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the hardest. That's not the easiest play. That's the hardest play.
Yeah,
to
that's
do.
Crazy.
So what if you would have said to him, I'll reform LCD Sound System if you reform Tin Machine. How do you think? What do you think?
I think he was busy. But I don't think he would have ever shied away from playing another Tin Machine show, mm-hmm. actually.
Yeah. So better than people think, the Tin Machine
yes.
stuff. So
I also think he said something really interesting. He was talking about Lou, you know, like the Lou Reed and Metallica record.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, that's some of the best writing Lou's done.
Yeah.
And like people don't, you know, like people make a snap judgment and aren't listening.
Yeah.
So
I listened to that. I listened to all of Lou Reed's over this year. I just went and listened to everything.
Wow.
In order. And that's it really is like the greatest story anyone ever told about their life.
Yeah.
And he's just telling his story. Like each album is a chapter.
And of a very strange story.
Yes. And it's unbelievable to see the entirety of it. To like really go and listen in order, and you see sometimes he would lose confidence. It seemed like he was learning how to write songs again sometimes. Like it would almost
like the original rapper?
Well, maybe not so much that. I would say more like rock and roll heart. It seems like he's almost going back to the drawing board on songwriting. And they would get very simple again, and then they would get complicated again, and then they would get simple again.
They'd get
again,
like almost doo-wop again.
Oh, it's really interesting to see that process. And now, so when you're just finally like, slide my chips in, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, you must now just feel like what is waiting for us with the reaction to this.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of thought that, like, maybe I'm paranoid, but just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not
that's
after
another T-shirt. You might, Mike, write that. That's the third shirt for the LCD Sound System merch booth.
Yeah, we're just working on this is merch meeting.
You could sell that one also at Spencer's Gifts. That one.
Oh my God, the fundies.
Yeah.
I was always, I felt like we had gotten away, like we'd gotten such a good rap.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who hated us there's always been like the guy who knows better, like who mm-hmm. liked us for a minute, but now just listens to Extreme Noise and is over. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. and I'm like, that's fine. If we're the foil for mm-hmm. you to show how cool you are, that's great.
I've done it. Plenty of times. Yeah. I've been on the end of bailing on things.
I've been on both sides of that.
Yeah, it's so fine. You get it.
So I'm not like, I've never been, but I felt like there were this kind of people who never really, like, who, I felt like there are people who were waiting for us to do something really terrible and wrong mm-hmm. so they could be right.
Okay.
About how we were a fraud or something. Yeah. And so I expected a certain backlash from people, but from people who didn't like the band, who'd just mm-hmm. be like, oh, this guy's full of crap.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the whole thing. But, and so I was prepared for that. I was like, that's fine. Like, my mm-hmm. wife thinks it's okay to do. Pat and Nancy think it's okay to do. David Bowie thinks it's okay to do. Mm-hmm. You can go.
Yeah, you're kind of covered.
I don't care what you, Anonymous 487 have to say about my band. But I was a little unprepared for, like, people who really love the band being hurt. Which it sounds naive now. In retrospect, it's dumb. But that moved me, and that made me like, mm-hmm. I mean, people were attacking people who loved my band mm-hmm. who were saying like they were really upset because they had gone. And then there were other people like chiming in being like, by the way, when I say people talking and what I mean is the lowest level of human conversation, which is internet comments.
Sure.
Yeah. But people were attacking these people. And so I felt like I was like, oh, well, I have to now come out of my like silence and mm-hmm. sort of have to just like say, hey, like if that's how people feel, like that's valid.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, you are the, as a person who likes music, you're the one maintaining that relationship. You're the person who actually is like, you know, you're doing all the work. Like
mm-hmm.
the Smiths made their records, congratulations, mm-hmm. maybe played some, but I did all the work in that relationship. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I went and bought the records. I love the band.
You went to buy that Smith Brothers record.
Yeah, and it was my heart that was broken when they stopped. And like, and I feel like nobody owed me anything, but I did feel like that I'm putting a lot in. And I felt like people that put a lot into us and felt that got their heart broken, like when it stopped and then got like, you know, you're not dead, you know, mm-hmm. like that type of stuff.
And how did that inform, though, like, to make it like we are back as a creative entity, not this is, we're not just doing a tour. This is not a this is not some cash in. This is not a thing. We're actually back because of music.
Right. Because I expected the record to be done like Toot Sweet.
So if that would have been the case, then the story would have been cleaner.
Well, yes, but I think it would have been worse. I'm glad in retrospect. I was really frustrated that it was. I underestimated how hard to have a baby and a tour and make a record and all that sort of stuff. Because the record actually didn't take me. The record wasn't that hard to make. It didn't take me that long. It was just hard to get that much time in a row to be in the studio. So like, if I would have done it without touring, it was not a particularly laborious record. It was actually like pretty pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Did the tone? How did the tone of this record also, which is different from the previous three to some degree?
I'm discovering that. I felt it was different, but you never know. You know, bands, when they record, and they're always like, it's going to blow people's minds. Mm-hmm. The guitars are panned really wide. And you're like, nobody cares. Mm-hmm. Like, the little crappy thing you think is like totally crazy that you put on the voice. Like, we never put any delay, and there's a little delay on it. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody notices that. So I'm always careful to say, like, well, this record's really different. But I do feel like it's different. It's a heavier record.
Yeah, it definitely. It's more of a. I think I said claustrophobic, maybe a little bit before. It's definitely an intense. It's an intense listen that also has a kind of a it tracks in the right. Like I think the sequencing on it goes in a direction that. Sets some kind of mood. I'm sorry if I'm vague.
There's no way to say it because it's not telling the story. There's no lyrical through line or anything like that.
But it definitely goes somewhere from song to song in a larger sense. That's the times I've listened to it. I thought it really I think it's great in that way. And, but for that to kind of, when did that really, when were you able to take a step back and see, like, wow, we are, this is what we are now in 2017. Like, this is, because it really doesn't sound like
the other three.
In a lot of ways, it doesn't. I mean, there's things that do, but there's things.
It's recognizably the band.
Yes.
But, yeah. Normally when I get close to the end of a record, and I've got like 6-7 songs, and I normally have 9.
Okay.
I start feeling like, okay, what's this record missing? Is normally the question I ask. Mm-hmm. And almost without fail, the last song I make is this first single. I'm like, oh, it's missing the first single.
Sure.
So I'll write North American Scum, or I'll write Drunk Girls, or something like that. No, this is sort of the last thing. Mm-hmm. On this record, I was like, well, there's a lot of really long, sprawling songs. There's a lot of darker songs, and I don't want to leave any of them off. And the last two things to get done are the second song, the third song. Is Other Voices second? Third. It's Other Voices, I think. And How Do You Sleep, which is like this 9-minute punishing, like the heaviest song on the record. And I was like, well, if I'm putting this on the record, like, it's not the first single.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm making a decision at this point, and it's a game of inches. It's a little bit of like, it's not a big swinging difference, but it is, there is some things that are not there anymore. There's some sounds and some energies that aren't there anymore, and they're replaced by things that are not equivalent. It makes the whole record lean darker, I think.
Sure.
Not that there aren't things that are.
No, there's definitely things.
Darker things before. It's not like there was zero dark things before, brighter things here. But it's just the overall tone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you're watching a movie where people get killed and you're laughing. It's a horror movie or a comedy based on the weight and amount of one or the other. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, and this is a horror movie. No.
That, Now here, now when you think of, if you had thought of LCD sound system as a thing that had an end date in the first iteration.
Yeah. I think this is a break and it's a, yeah.
So what is it like to go now with this band that, I mean, is, it's like you, it seems like you're going forward. It's like, is there another end date now or is this just an infinity sign?
I don't think I would ever end the band in any way recognizable other than to just quietly not do just it.
To kind of just fade drift away. Off.
Yeah, I don't think, I think you only get one.
One of those.
We had an ending. It's done. We had a funeral. We're dead.
I think it would be really exciting.
It'd be really funny.
Just like, if you just announce, this is it. And then you keep doing this.
Yeah, just keep.
You just keep pulling the plug on it. Farewell.
Yeah.
It's just, and then, then it's like, oh, here he comes again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Just, I took 2 months off and I started writing songs again. So
it felt, it really thought, I thought that was the real end of the thing.
But there's also, on a slightly more serious note, I did feel like ending the band was like, I was like, that was perfect. I was like, mm-hmm. I would never mess that up.
Yeah.
That's perfect. And then I, because I took some joy in destroying this makes me sound like a crazy person, but I took some joy in destroying an upward career. Like there was something in that that just really tickled me. That just felt like really correct to who I am.
You just went the, everybody zigs.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're like, I'm going to zag.
Well, also it's just a way of explaining, like, okay, we'd get asked to do ads all the time. Like people would be like, we're going to give you a bunch of money and do an ad. We want to use your song in this stupid ad. And I'd be like, no. And the higher the money got, the more pleasure I took in saying no, like the more joy. Yeah. And I had a manager, my old manager, Keith, who retired. He was the best manager in the world for him at the time because he was like, he also took pleasure. He's like, oh, I cannot wait to call them. They're so confident. Like they're literally rolling their eyes being like, okay, we get it. No, we'll double it. Like, you know, like they just, because they are so sure and there's something that repulsed me in their confidence that they had money.
That they just didn't hit the number yet.
Yeah. That they're, and also that they're like, we know you're for sale.
Yeah.
Like we know. And like, the kind of like smarmy, like know-it-allness of like somebody being like, look, you know, you got
like,
me.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's like, it's not your money. I didn't get you. It's not going to affect you, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, and, but I would take a weird pleasure in just being like,
sure.
Yeah. Like, no. And I could use it. Like, you know, it's just like, but it was something. And also knowing that, like, you get no credit for that. That's the beautiful thing about it. Like, you can't, nobody knows what you don't do. They don't care. And that's, so you know, it's, there's some joy in that.
Yeah.
So I took some joy in being like, smash. And in a weird way, it was just as interesting, though a little more complicated because ending a band was more correct in my, like, I guess punk rock brain, but like putting it back was again, smashing it again, like just being like, and now we had the perfect out and now we're back into being judged. Mm-hmm. We're back into comment sections. We're back in to, you know, bad reviews and somebody being like, they've lost it or whatever. It's, we're open again for like the business of human cruelty and interaction.
Yeah. But you're back in as a competitive
force.
Active concern.
Yeah.
It isn't something where you're putting like an EP out that has like one new song and two live songs.
Yeah. Or a best of that has one new song on it.
Yeah.
Which is always loving people to that.
It's always the greatest
like,
song.
Like that is not
it.
Your best song.
Yeah. It's always like, yeah. Like what was that? Remember that one Police thing where it's like, don't stand so close to me 86
or something. Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Like,
you know what the problem with that song was? It didn't have electronic drums on it.
Yeah.
That was really the problem with that
song. That song was almost there.
Yeah.
Didn't have enough gated digital reverb.
Thankfully, the new technology makes the Police.
Have you heard
Do you know the ZZ Top? You a ZZ Top person?
Oh, those three albums, which ones? The ones they went back from the 70s and redid? Yes. Yes.
And
horrifying.
And said like Tejas.
Yeah.
The problem with Tejas is it doesn't sound enough.
Like Eliminator.
Because
ZZ Top were an actual legitimate three dirtbags.
Amazing band.
So great. And then they tripped on this new success and they had like a little sequencer kind of going. Yeah, and
which all more power to them. Like congratulations. Mm-hmm. They made legs. They had videos. They were guys with crazy beards. They were like almost a very well constructed weird version of a novelty act.
Yes. That they were, it was a strange thing that these old guys with beards were on MTV all
with sunglasses and long beards and like guitars that would spin around on their belt buckles. But Tres Hombres, you know, Rio Grande Mud and Tejas, like these records are near perfect rock records.
Yes. And so they were just like, I don't know if our fans who got on board with us with Sharp Dressed Man are going to hang with our old sound. So they remixed
them. Like, yeah, some of the best drum sounds ever recorded were replaced
for
this. By like digital. Yeah. Drums.
And for the longest time, that was the only version you could get of the thing. Hey, Mike, who's good here? Okay.
Line five.
All right. Let's do this. Let's see what the people have to say for James Murphy.
Oh, boy.
Hi, Best Show.
Hey there.
Hey, hi. Welcome to the Best Show.
Thank you. This is Admiral Dave on the Hudson.
Admiral Dave on the Hudson. Hi, Admiral Dave. How are you? You're here with me and James Murphy.
Hello.
Hello, James. I've just been listening to you talk. It's very interesting.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm calling to see if you guys are still interested in going out on the Coors Light sailboat.
Oh, I'm sorry you were on hold for that. There's a guy with a boat that has a Coors Light band. It's funny. You talked about how you were turning down ads left and right. Meanwhile, I'm like, how can I get on this Coors Light boat that's going to be sailing around the Hudson? I will email you tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow. And you'll get me and the rest of the Best Show. Because, look, Mike loves Coors Light. I'm doing this for
I actually saw that happening.
Mike
drinking
loves
outside.
Coors Light.
I saw that happening.
Yeah.
There's a giant 50-foot beer bottle on the sail. You can't go wrong.
Admiral,
there's a reason I'm calling on this show.
Yes, what's that?
Well, we were out sailing around, and we got a call from Columbia Records, and they said that they would like to possibly advertise American Dream on a sailboat.
Is that true? It doesn't
matter.
It doesn't matter.
I don't think they're going to do it, but I thought that was interesting because we like listening to LCD Sounds while we're sailing around. It's great sailing music.
That's what it's. I mean, it's like Christopher Cross.
Did you know it was great sailing music?
I've always. That's the main. That's the thrust.
It's like some
you
people,
guys and Christopher Cross are main. We got it on rotate.
Some people finish a record and then they go drive around in a car and play it to make sure it sounds good coming out of car speakers. You get out on a sailboat.
Yeah, and listen to the car speakers that are wedged into a sailboat cabin.
Yes.
Right, going through a Bluetooth with a lot of static
and
a lot of wind noise.
That's where it's at.
And you're just thing dropped out every 10 seconds.
It still gets across.
Yes, record's ready. Send it.
I think the speakers are out of phase too, so.
That's a fun way to listen to music.
No, it's not. There's no excuse for that.
Well, look, Admiral Dave, I will follow up on this with you.
Okay.
Thanks, buddy. Best Show.
What's up, Tom? It's Thor from Dirty Wet.
Hello.
Hey, I had to bleep you. You can't say that. You can't say that. Was it Thor?
Yes.
You can't say that word on the show, Thor. Come on.
Great. Looks like my favorite media personality just joined the ranks of the PC Thought Police. Great news.
I'm not a member of the PC Thought Police.
Well,
you know.
It's just the PC Word Police. It's different.
Yeah.
You can think it.
Yeah.
I don't need it.
You can think it.
Exactly. It's a free society, right?
But
I guess not.
Well, the word you said was horrible. And I'm not going to put it on the show.
All right. Fair enough.
Now, and what does dirty, wet, it was like dirty, wet, and then I bleeped it.
Right.
What does that even mean, dirty, wet?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Ugh. We're only Brooklyn's number one filth rock band. Where have you been?
Filth rock.
Yes.
I didn't even know filth rock was like a genre.
Are you nuts? It's huge. And look, don't get me wrong. There are other bands that are good, like covered in the Sewage Garglers, Three Scoops of, also Defiled Carcass of, you probably had to bleep those, right, I guess?
Every one of those for Sewage Garglers, I think I let through.
They're good, too. But seriously, we're like the Beatles to their, I don't know, whoever was worse than the Beatles back in the 50s.
Uh-huh. 50s. Yeah, those, you know, the Beatles back in the... I'm not even going to get into...
Look, I've done my research now. You do yours.
Look, hey, I'm here. We have James Murphy here. Do you have a... Is that what... Did you call with a question for James?
Not so much a question as a statement.
Okay.
Bring it.
What's the statement?
Watch your back, bro. What's so funny?
Why would you tell him to watch his back?
Well, look, this clown's 10-show December run at Brooklyn Steel.
Yeah.
It falls right when my band was hoping to stage our 12 Days of Filthmouth shows.
At Brooklyn Steel?
Yes, and for some reason, they went with those clowns over us. I don't get it.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess no offense to you, Thor, but is filth rock even big enough to, like, do Brooklyn Steel, like, 12 nights?
You bet you're fat, filthy. It is.
Again, I had to bleep you.
You're kidding me.
Yes, I'm not letting this
go. Oh, my God, what, is this a Bible show?
It's not a Bible show.
I'll tell you, man, I don't like the vibe either of you guys are putting out right now. And,
oh, I'm sorry.
And you listen to me. Just to show you guys, we're going to do 70 shows in a row next year at Brooklyn Steel.
70.
No, scratch that. We're going to do 180, each one filthier than the last.
You're going to do...
Filth Fest.
So for Filth Fest, you're going to do 100...
It's not Filth Fest, it's Filthmas.
So you're going to do 180 consecutive shows...
Yes.
...at Brooklyn Steel.
Yes.
And... Each one's going to get somehow filthy. So you're going to track the filthiness. So what's that? Like,
filthometer?
Do you have a filthometer?
As a matter of fact, there is a filthometer.
Well,
not so smart, are we now? Actually, I guess you are smart because you did guess it.
Okay.
Joke's on me. Yeah. I give you that one.
Uh huh. So you got that. So yeah.
How do you guys feel about Scumcore?
That's child's play. I'll tell you.
Microgenres that just, you know, a lot of fights.
You listen to me, Kat, all right? That final show we're going to do, it's going to be so filthy. Here's what we're going to do. We're all going to, with our, and then we're going to take out, and then we're going to spray until at the very end it's going to be like a wall of just hot pudding all over everybody.
Okay, that all had to get bleeped.
There. You're kidding!
No.
Oh my God.
So you don't. So that's what you called to tell James to watch his back?
Well, yeah, that's part of it, but there's also a second layer to my call.
Yeah.
Jim, I'll be honest, all right? I actually never heard of LSD Sound Sister until tonight, but I did give a listen to some of your jams on Spotify before I called, and I dug what I heard.
Thank you.
It's good stuff. I do have to say this, though. You could use a little more crotch fire when it comes to the percussion.
Is that a piece of upward gear?
Excuse me? Oh, no. I supply the crotch fire.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'd love to show you what I can do behind the tubs.
So what, do you want to send him a CD or something?
No. I got my kit right here.
Oh, great.
I'm going to lay down some of the sickness right now. Is that cool?
Sure.
What do you think?
Go ahead, Thor.
All right. Check it out. Here we go. What?
Solid.
I need to play right now! This is important!
Who are you yelling at?
My mommy. She doesn't want me playing after 9 p.m.
And how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 13. Why?
I would have this.
You got a garbage mouth.
Yeah, because you got a garbage mouth and
you potty mouth.
Like you know your way around stuff. I would have thought you were an adult.
Oh, well, you know, my stones dropped way early. And I'll tell you, it's a blessing and a curse. You know, below the belt, I'm really ready for filth. But emotionally and mentally, I'm still in fun cereal mode. Yeah.
FSM.
That's right.
FCM.
Mom! I'll be up in a minute! I'm on the radio with Tom Sharpling and Jim from the CD Sound Spectrum! Yeah, he wants to hire me to play drums in his band! Guys, I'm so sorry you had to hear that. It's pretty embarrassing.
You seem to be dealing with it.
I'm doing my best.
Uh-huh.
But listen, you know, I should go upstairs before this becomes even more of a scene from The King of Comedy, all right? I mean, pretty soon I'll be telling you that I'll give you the 6 weeks, right?
Yeah, like The King of Comedy.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, shoot me a DM on Twitter, okay? I'm at FilthyThor69.
I'll shoot you a BM.
Sounds great. Mom! Shut up, you!
There you go. Thor, I guess, I don't know, that was...
A lot of energy just left the room.
13-year-old.
Yeah.
I don't know what's strange. He was 13. That he's 13 was strange, but he also had a working knowledge of King of Comedy for a 13-year-old. That was very...
Well,
very...
he's got a Betamax.
Yeah, I guess he's got it, yeah. Who's good here, Mike? I'm not going to... Because look, Mike, I'm not messing around this time. We got, again, A-plus list guest. These calls better not... If one of these calls sucks, you're on thin ice. You're already on thin ice.
What happens?
He's out of here.
Okay.
He's out.
Just want to clarify.
Put him on your...
I'm gonna clarify
you got
the
nine
threat.
People on stage. I'll just trade him with...
No one's going to notice.
I'm just going to trade him to you guys.
Yeah, true.
Put him up there.
For trade him for in like a tambourinist to be mentioned later.
Yeah. Best show. Hello. Hi. You're listening to a different show, apparently. That's not us. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Tom Pratt really rules. Oh man, Avalanche really thinks he's cool.
Oh, this James is this. His name's Avalanche Bob. He's
Hello.
A real musician, and he's in New York, right? You're a New York musician,
right? Yeah.
And he does the thing where he's like a he does. What do you call your music again? Surf.
Oh, I call it yodel, punk, and snowboard, and rock and roll. And hey, Tom, I got a really positive song I'd like to sing for you.
Okay, let's hear the
okay.
song.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's life. That's what all the people say. Yeah. Yeah, life is tough. When I came back into this world, I knew it was going to be rough. But I know I had soul inside of me. And with God's help, I'm going to reach my destiny. So I keep on rocking. No, I won't stop rocking. Hey, life, get out of my way. I keep on rocking. No, I'll never stop rocking. Hey, life, hear what I say. The life said, you know what, man? I'm going to make it a little older. Yeah, no cat, you're going to be out there and you're going to be colder. I said, life, hell, you're a winner. I ain't getting older, I'm getting better, and I keep on rocking, now I'll never stop rocking, hey, life, get out of my way, I keep on rocking, oh, I'll never stop rocking, hey, life, hear what I say, life said, you know what, man, you and me, we're going to go into a boxing ring, when I get through with your butt, you won't be able to sing, and life was standing there wearing black trunks, and I was wearing brown, and life must have weighed about 260 million pounds, than I hitting left with a hurricane twist and a snowboard punch in the mouth, when I hitting left with a pumpkin yo-yo in the air and knock the fur out. And I kept on rocking, Tom. We keep on rocking. Life, get out of our way. Keep on rocking. No, I'll never stop rocking. Hey, life, hear what I say. Wow, I got better things to do. Can't worry about you. Get out of my way. I don't care about age. I'm too much in a rage. Get out of my way. Well, I care about the girls and the future boys and girls. Get out of my way. Get out of my way. Punk-a-doodle-yay-dee-yay. Get out of my way. Punk-a-doodle-yay. Tom said, get out of my way. Punk-a-doodle-yay-dee-yay. Ricky Mike said, get out of my way. Punk-a-doodle-yay-dee-yay. Tom Biggs said, get out of my way. Get out of my way. I'm going to punk you away.
Oh, my God. That was fantastic, Avalanche Bob.
Excellent.
You like it?
I did. I thought it was great. That's a good song. Now, you...
You like it, Tom?
I did, yes. I liked it. I liked it. It was great. We have...
That's inspirational, right?
It was inspirational, yeah.
Yeah, man. You're the best. Listen, we're going to be doing a show at Maloney's in about 3 weeks, and the album's coming out. You're going to love it.
Okay, when's the album come out?
We're working to end up about 3 weeks. I think maybe sooner. I'm not sure. We want to make it perfect, you know?
No, I get it. Look, you're just like James in that way, where it took them longer to put their album out, and you're doing the same thing. It's quality first.
Yeah. Thanks for everything, Tom.
Of course.
You're the best.
You have a great night, buddy.
You too, man. Keep rocking. Remember, life, get out of your way.
I can't not.
Keep on.
Bye. He does this thing. He's been doing. He started making music in the 50s.
Wow.
And he's still.
When the Beatles were making
it. When the Beatles were doing it, like Thor said. And that makes sense now that he's 13.
Yeah.
I understand.
So anything with 1913 is when the Beatles started for him.
Isn't there a funny thing with that? That it's just like. If you're just like not 26 years old, and maybe that's even too old, you're just old. Like young people just think anyone, they'd think like, yeah, you know who's old? They'd be like, they'd think you're old, and then they would also
I'm old.
But they would also think like, you know who else is old? And they would think like Dolly Parton's old too. And it's like, yeah, but she's like 25 years old. Older than, you know what I mean?
The idea
is like that 25 years means nothing if you're old, you're just old.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter if you're in your 40s or 70s.
Right.
You're just not.
Age isn't a number.
No.
You know, it's actually just a series of chemical reactions in your body that slowly kill you. That's another shirt. Age isn't a number. It's a series of chemical reactions that happen in sequence that slowly kill you.
Did you get that one, Mike?
That drain the ability of your cells to regenerate.
Did you get that shirt idea?
Age isn't a number. It's a series of sequential chemical reactions in your body that slowly take the ability of your cells to replicate and kill you.
Yeah, I'll get that one.
Okay. Yeah, what's that, Mike?
Line one.
Line one. Line one. I'm told to go to line one. Best show, hi.
Hey, this is Todd Abramson calling.
Oh, there we go. Great. Hey, it's Todd Abramson from formerly of Maxwell's.
And it's funny that you say formerly of Maxwell's, Tom, because there were a lot of rumors swirling about as to why, in fact, Maxwell's closed. The story that I didn't want to tell at the time that I think I can finally reveal to your listeners
now
is that it was due to some peanut butter pies. That weren't paid for by staff members.
It adds up.
So that's what got to
slowly bled the place dry.
One peanut butter pie
at a time.
Thief is a strong word. One of the people who ate those peanut butter pies is here, James Murphy, who was a sound man at Maxwell's.
I'm really sorry.
James, would you have any desire maybe to retroactively pay for some of those pies?
I don't want to like legally agree to anything, you know, cause it's being documented, but I'd have to ask about, is there interest or is it just literally for the face value of the pies at the time of the eating?
Well, look, I'll tell you what, you know, we, you know how we do things in showbiz.
Yeah.
Never mind
the biz.
Financial remuneration. What do you say?
Or remuneration.
We just do a an LCD sound system show at Montgomery Hall in Jersey City, and we call it even.
That seems like a
very fair deal. Isn't that what you were about to say?
A bit of a deal for me, because if you were to, I don't know, amortize those pies.
I mean, we would have to put, you know, it wouldn't be face value on those on that pie. We would have to add interest. It was a while ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, actually, that the pies, presumably, depending on the kind of financing that I would be having on the pies, it's like, let's think about this. It's 1995, maybe, right?
So we're talking like credit card
Rates?
Yeah,
I can't get, yeah, because in 1995, I'm not going to get a bank loan for 3%.
Yeah.
We're talking about like possibly compounded 20%, like, you know, like credit card style, like APR stuff, which might add up to six figures by 2017 for the pies.
So you're looking at run of shows.
So you're willing to forego potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yes, and as a restaurateur yourself, you know what a bold move that is on my part.
It's foolhardy. I mean, potentially foolhardy.
Potentially, but no risk, no reward.
You know, you've always lived on the knife's edge, Todd. What about if you just settle out and James gives you a shirt that says, Record Store Jerks Saved My Life? Like an LCD sound system. Their new merch, that one of the new shirts says, Record Store Jerks Saved My Life, based on Bleecker Bob's? Where was
It? Well, it was City Gardens and Bleecker Bob's.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I don't know, like, what's a lower gift than a band giving away its own merch? Like, what's less of a gift than, like, we have this discussion, like, what's less, like, that seems like a pretty shallow gift. It's like, here's a picture of me.
Yeah. Like a promo-only CDs.
Yeah. That could be less
that
of a
gift. That might
be
less. Like a promo-only radio. Because it implies that it's collectible.
The single edit
of
a song that's never been a single.
Yeah, because no CD
it's just less
single
of the
has
music.
Ever been collectible.
No.
Todd?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll speak to my legal team about accepting the shirt, and I'll get back to you tomorrow.
Have our people talk to your people.
Great.
Thanks a lot, guys. Right. Appreciate it.
I'm going to play a quick record by Glenn Campbell, and then we'll pick it back up. The late, great Glenn Campbell.
GC.
Yes. This is my favorite song by him. Galveston.
Galveston, oh Galveston, I still hear your sea winds blowing.
Oh, no. Not double playing. Not double playing Galveston.
Oh, I'm eating an Oreo.
Yes, we were having our
cookie freak out.
Yes, we bought a bunch of Oreos, tasting all the different flavors. Dude, are you had the blueberry?
What?
Never had the blue. There's a blueberry one. Seems so artificial.
That sounds terrifying and awful.
It just seems like in a lab somewhere.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
That's another shirt.
If it ain't, and just a picture of an Oreo.
Yeah.
That says, instead of Oreo on it, says LCD.
Yeah. Money.
Mike?
Shirt it up.
Yeah. Shirt it up, Mike.
Just print them. I don't even need to see proofs.
Just,
just go with it. It's a no. It's a can't lose.
Yeah,
it's like Top Gun.
And then if you do things during the shows where you're just like, "Hey, everybody, we go to the merch table now. If you buy the Oreo shirt, it's $5 off the shirt for the next two songs."
Like flash sales.
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, "Hey, we're running a little. We have more mediums than we know what to do with this one shirt."
Just got handed a note, and tequila shots are 50% off for the next 8 minutes. Yeah. 8 minutes.
So Brooklyn Steel, you've done
a heapin' helpin'.
It's a new venue in New York.
It is a new venue.
It's really great.
I like it. I'm really excited
about
it.
The sight lines are like
perfect. What, for people who aren't in the industry, in the biz, mm-hmm. sight lines means what you see.
Yes. But I would say, and look, am I going to put down Terminal 5? No, I'm not going to put down. I enjoy going to a show where there's a 60% chance I don't get to see who's on stage, just like anybody else. It's fun.
It is a good, if you're in the very front row of the balcony.
Yes. An L-shaped venue. I enjoy seeing a show that it's like the, it's like the, that movie Bad Boys, the Timothy Hutton one where the, you're going into the prison. It's like a futuristic prison, basically.
Yeah. It's, it's a non-panopticon.
Like you're waiting to it's get things thrown at you. Yes.
And you, well, you, but you know to at least go to the show with a pillowcase full of soda cans.
Yes. And fight your way around the L to where you can see who's on stage. Yeah. But Terminal 5, look, I've seen plenty of stuff. I had a good time there. I'm not going to say. But Brooklyn Steel's very nice. It's got a nice wide stage.
Yep.
Like the stage looks wider than like the stage you guys, it's Madison Square Garden. It almost looks like wider than that, like at least in the movie.
Well, everything looks
like you're kind of smushed more.
I mean, we liked it. We agreed to play it before I saw it.
Okay.
So I didn't play it because we liked it. Just, you know, but then it's, I feel like it's, not to be like a promo guy, but I feel like it's the venue the city needed a bit.
Kind of.
You know what I mean? It's like we didn't have a lot that size and like, what you know, like Roseland shut down and a lot of places shut down.
Who did you see at Roseland? Let's go. Let's think. Who was good at Roseland that you saw?
I saw Galaxy 500 open for the Cocteau Twins.
Okay.
At Roseland, which was very strange. Because the Cocteau Twins were so quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How quiet were they?
Sorry,
they were so quiet.
That is, now it's like, in all of time, no one has ever said, the Cocteau Twins were so quiet were they?
And then suddenly it's like a Charles Nelson Reilly bit. Yeah. They were so quiet that I could hear the guitar pick on the strings in the front row.
Uh-huh.
Like I could actually acoustically hear the strumming of
string by of string.
Robin Guthrie or Simon Ramon's strings.
Sure.
On the pick. I could hear that happen. Mm-hmm. Which was so a very uncanny experience.
So you saw Galaxy 500.
They were amazing.
They were so good.
They were so good.
I saw them at Maxwell's one night when it was snowing.
And they played Listen to the
Snow. And it was snowing outside. It's like one of those things that can... Look, James. They've taken it all away from me. Everything. Piece by piece, I've been dismantled by this world.
You're just like a head.
They can't take that away from me.
No.
That I was in Maxwell's, and I saw Galaxy 500 play, and it snowed outside.
And
it
they played
so
the Yoko song,
amazing. And they were like... Another funny thing is that, like, at the time, they were, like, considered, like, quiet. And then now I think people might consider them a little loud.
Yeah. They were, you know, they were gentle.
Yes.
And the drummer was really flowy.
Yeah.
And I loved the way he played physically.
Yeah, Damon Krakowski.
I really was super down with them.
Yeah. They were one of the few bands that didn't get back together in any capacity.
Well, I bought one of Dean's old guitars, Dean Wareham's old guitars.
Wow.
Bought it from the shop in Brooklyn, Main Drag. They had an old Japanese Bernie, which is like a copy of a Les Paul, and I bought it. We played on stage with LCD for a while.
Who didn't get back together?
Smiths.
The Jam.
The Jam. Yeah, true.
Who else? Who else did not do the thing?
Three Dog Night.
I'm going to say, I might disagree. I'm going to bet there's some version of
Bread. I'm just going to throw it out. I don't know, but if only there was a device that could tell us.
I know, right? But what am I Googling on that?
Bread Reunion.
Bread Reunion? It's like, yeah.
I'm a big fan of Guitar Man by Bread.
That was that. I like that one song. The one was like, what's the one where it's like, that everything I need? Is that the song that you're everything and I need?
Is that Brad?
Is that Brad, Mike? Everything I own. I think that's Brad.
Huh.
Yeah. Mike says it's Brad.
Okay, I believe you.
Mike knows his Brad.
You know, If is the big hit, yeah, of course. But Guitar Man.
Yeah.
Solid lyrics on Guitar Man.
Okay. Check it out. Check it out.
Who else didn't reunify?
Yeah, the Jam would have been... Could you imagine how huge the Jam would be if they had gotten back together?
Yeah, but I think, you know, he felt it just, you know...
Yeah, that he did it.
Going backwards, yeah.
Yes. There's no way, though...
Dead Boys.
Oasis, there's no way they don't get back. It feels like they're almost riding the thing of just saying, like...
They're just surfing it. Yeah.
Like, just like, now... Like, it's almost like it's like The Big Short or something. They're just like,
well, it's a tough, it's a tough one. It's like ego versus hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which one wins?
Well, they can put a big stack of money between the two of them.
And just,
what if they just have a money
that
wall?
Would be, see, and they could sing Money Wall instead of Wonderwall.
Wonderwall, yeah. They just like.
It's my money wall.
That would be the, and then
I would actually be really down with that.
That would be fantastic.
I would go see them play Money Wall with a stack of cash between them.
Yeah. Well, if you're out there, I know Noel listens.
Not really?
Sure. No, that would be amazing. I know Bonehead probably listens. Yeah, it's a pretty short list, but I'll say this. When I saw you guys do the Webster Hall show,
mm-hmm.
it really felt like, oh, there's something to actually like prove. It felt like there was such a force behind it. Like we have to do this. We can't just come back and be very good.
No. We were very clear before we played. We had a big conversation about it. Like, we actually have to be 2 or 3 times better than we ever were for anyone to even say that we're almost as good as we used to be.
Yeah. It's like you guys were so locked in that it feels like there's a definite sense of purpose behind it. And then now with the album, when does the album come out?
September 1st.
September 1st.
At a non-existent record store near you.
Yeah. So you can go to
the store place.
Yeah, go to the store place.
You know, where the record store is. And go to the guy that's there.
And say to the guy, hey, I want to order a copy of American Dream, not Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
I want to order a copy of the LCD Sound Systems.
Yeah, I'd like the LCD Sound Systems new record. The
And get scolded.
And then you're just going to be like, you're just doing like, shows from that point? The rest of your year is just on and off shows?
Yeah. We're doing the thing that bands do, mm-hmm. which is play shows at the time that a record is available.
And, like, what is your... Yes, that's fair. What songs has your relationship to changed that you perform? And, like, how have they changed?
honestly, they've all changed by performing them. You know, sometimes they just get better. We play them better. Sometimes, like, mm-hmm. what I thought would make them work doesn't work, and something else works. There's a song called Your City's a Sucker, which is the B-side of Movement, which is our mm-hmm. first, which I kind of, as just to be a jerk, I made Movement the first single on when we signed to EMI, mm-hmm. which was like, it's clearly not going to get us a lot of airplay. Yeah, and Your City's a Sucker is the B-side, which is like mm-hmm. one of my favorites. And we still play it now.
Yeah. Well, you opened with
it. It's a deep cut.
One of the...
Brooklyn
I saw
Steals,
you at Brooklyn
yeah.
Steel, so you guys opened with that. So, you know, I'm paying attention.
So we're playing deep cuts.
Yeah.
So that one's changed because it's like become a song that one of the songs we like the most.
Sure.
Whereas at first it was just a B-side.
Mm-hmm.
Are
there certain songs that's hard that it's easy to get inside of?
Yeah, All My Friends is one of the easiest songs to get inside of when you play live.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like it's built in a really subtle way that, like, the way we play it now very differently than the record,
mm-hmm.
but it's like kind of like a more grown up, a more expanded, detailed version, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's got a lot more detail now.
And does it feel like it's going to be in that slot live for...
We kind of joke about it. Like, we're working on the set list. And we're like, we can cut all my friends. And, like, you know, that's just, we can't cut it at the moment.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're going to do because I'm not the guy who's just like, what we're talking, you know, I'm not just going to play the new record, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I never wanted to be that guy. I never liked going to see that show. I was like, oh.
Yeah. Or you're being, lectured a little bit.
Yeah, like you idiots who like the other thing we did. Yeah. But something's going to have to give because mm-hmm. the songs are really long mm-hmm. and we already play a long time.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're not the boss, but we're, you know, climbing up into multiple hours. And as a new record comes out and another new record, it's like things are going to have to get shelved. And, like, mm-hmm. the funny thing is some songs that we like – we don't need to play because people aren't as attached to them, are songs we like to play. Like, we're like, well, we could cut Movement
mm-hmm.
because it's not anybody's favorite song. But live, it is, like, one of our favorite songs to play. And it's also, we cut it, we gained 2.5 minutes. There's nothing else 2.5 minutes long.
Yeah, it's not like you're making up that much ground.
No.
Yeah.
We started cutting Losing My Edge and Yeah,
mm-hmm.
which, because they're both long, and mm-hmm. we played them for long enough.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we just have to move stuff off the shelf, you know?
Yeah.
Gotta take things off the menu.
Yeah, it's hard.
You've got to get the specials.
Yeah, like at Maxwell's.
You got to get Madness, get punched in the chest.
Get punched in the chest, take the peanut butter pie off the... You were still eating peanut butter pie that someone stuck their finger in, though. That didn't in any way...
I was a scumbag. You know? It's a free peanut butter pie, dude.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I wasn't dumpster diving. I was eating a peanut butter pie that a person who works in food service touched.
Yeah. At a rock club. Yeah, I'm just trying to wind Todd up now. At this point, I'm trying to just get Todd's back on the line. What are you saying about the wait staff at Maxwell's?
I loved that place. That place, PA was a mess, Todd. I rewired that PA.
You rewired
I
the PA.
I worked on that PA because that PA was a mess. Yeah. It was unbalanced, the left and right. They didn't, like, there was, I think it was mono and it wasn't like... lined up, so mm-hmm. I had to do a lot of work to it.
When did that bug hit you that you had an aptitude for the wires part of things?
On tour, I mean, I always kind of like was into it, and it was always a means to an end. I didn't think I was a technical person. I was mm-hmm. always like, I want to get this done. Yeah. But when we recorded Pony, I'd been recording with other people, and it was like, ugh, it wasn't going the way I wanted. And I recorded myself, and it wasn't getting the sound I wanted. And then Bob Weston.
The great
Bob Weston, who
one
had
of my
recorded
all-time favorite bands, Volcano Sun,
totally, and
the
also
best bands ever.
And he produced The Pigeon Is the Most Popular Bird, the Six Finger record.
Yeah,
and we had him come record my band Pony. It was the first thing we recorded in the first studio I built.
Mm-hmm.
And watching him work was really simple. He just and I'm like, oh. Because I had all this need for knowledge. I had all these places to put the information because I'd been failing to get the sound I wanted. And he was like, why are the needles so low? And he's like, well, these are transients and they're fast. They're drums. So you don't want them going all the way to zero because they're going much faster. It's like all this nerd stuff. Yeah. And it clicked with me. And suddenly I realized that, like, knowing the technical stuff was going to give me what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was able to work without being the singer or being performer because nobody wanted to see my band. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't going to make a living doing that. So I was the sound guy for Six Finger Satellite or Archers of Loaf, mm-hmm. and, you know, mm-hmm. Bands of that era.
Sure.
But doing sound for Six Finger Satellite was when I learned, like, I was like, I can really do this.
Mm-hmm.
Cause we would just rewire PAs all the time. And I would do all these dirty tricks, like pretending that I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that no one would watch me, and then I would go turn up like the outputs of the crossovers and like get way more gain, and they'd all be looking at the desk like, you can't run that in the red. I'm like, it's in the green. Like, I was like, yeah, it's really loud. And I'm like, well, you have a great PA. You pretend to be like some yokel. And we blew up a PA in, I forget where we were, New Mexico, like literally burst into flames. But being with those guys was great because they just were not very friendly, and so it would allow me to be less friendly.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we did a show, and I had a jacket that would zip up over up to my nose
mm-hmm.
and sunglasses. And I'd be all friendly all day, and then as soon as the show started, I zipped the jacket up to my nose. I put the sunglasses on. The guy comes over and was like, hey, man,
can you turn it down a little? And I just looked at him like a robot and shook my head no and went back to mixing without moving.
Sunglass zipper face won't lower the...
good times.
Yeah.
Good times.
You know what I'm going to do? We'll take these final couple calls.
Bring it.
And then we'll say, we'll let you go home.
Throw me into a car with an Oreo. Yes.
Best show, hi.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
It's Audrey, Sharon, and Dylan from Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Europe.
How are you?
Good.
What's going on tonight? Why are you up so late?
Because we want to be.
And don't tell our mom, but our dad is helping us with this.
Wait, what? Don't tell your mom what?
Our dad is helping us with this.
Because our mom
And what's dad want to know? Why is dad forcing his children to call in to radio shows?
He just wants us to call you.
Oh, look.
It's late.
You tell dad you want to go to Toys R Us tomorrow. Right?
No!
And then, but you say this, I don't want no dumb educational toys. I want some good stuff.
Oh, dumb educational toys.
Yeah.
I want something slightly dangerous.
Yeah, and slightly dangerous.
He's like, what?
And slightly dangerous.
And slightly dangerous. He said okay.
Look, this is a win for everybody.
Nothing under $100.
Yeah. High ticket items also.
Yep.
Okay. And when you get to the register, you want to get some candy also that they have.
Okay.
Really high sugar content.
Yes. Just like sugar daddies.
I wish I get 5 million pieces of candy.
There you go. 5 million pieces of candy.
You start high.
Yeah, let's get
five there. Okay. All right, guys. You call me another time.
Okay.
Okay. All right, bye. Best show. Hi.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Best show. Hello.
Sounds a little bit like a deadline. I don't want to be that guy, but I want to tell you your business.
Yeah. Hello. Hey, you're out. Best show. Hi.
Hello.
Yes, hi. Welcome to the best show.
Oh, is this mine?
What?
Hi.
You're here with Tom and James Murphy.
Right now?
Yeah, right now.
Oh, okay, hi. I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness, this is crazy. Hi, you guys. I'm a 17-year-old, and I love the LCD sound system so much. It's kind of amazing. I don't know.
What's your favorite song?
Your City of the Sucker is actually. I find myself coming back to that one a lot. I really enjoy the fact that you guys enjoyed playing it.
Deep cuts.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness. I think it's so cool. Oh my goodness. I think it's so cool how you guys, I have two questions if you don't mind, for Mr. Murphy.
Go ahead.
Bring it.
I think it's so cool how you guys I felt so in love with your music, and I think, you're so, like, you started sort of this wave of this kind of, like, it sort of morphed into this kind of ironic thing that's almost condescending or whatever. But I think yours came from a place of, like, another level of, like, just finding a connection between audience and musician. But I think it's interesting that as, like, someone who loves your music so much, I love your music in the way that I love someone like the Smiths or something like that. So I wonder how it feels for someone like you, because I don't know how comfortable you would be with, like, a traditional rock kind of legacy, which I think...
I have a funny... It's funny that you say that in that sequence, because in, I think, 2001, myself and Tim Goldsworthy, my old partner at DFA, went to England and interviewed Morrissey for
magazine that used to be around called Index Magazine. And we were woefully unprepared to be interviewing anybody, let alone Morrissey. And the only thing I could sputter out, while Tim was pretending to be calm and they had a cup of tea that was just rattling because it had a saucer, which was an error, a judgment error to hold a tea, a spoon, and a saucer. And I was like, how does it feel? And I asked the same question. I was like, how does it feel to have people like us, like somebody just literally freaking out over you and what you do? And he was just like, boring, you know, I think was his answer. But, but I felt, you know, I it's very funny that you would ask that question, given that that's literally the person that I asked the same question of. Oh, many long years ago, when you were three.
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the day.
Yeah, that wasn't even the day, but yes.
And then my other question, I don't know if I want to ask it anymore because it's a little sillier, but what's up with the album artwork for this new album? Because I kind of love it, but I'm just curious, like, where that came from, because it's a little strange.
Well, I guess, all right, well, I'll begin at the beginning. My friend Rob Reynolds is a really accomplished, like, hyper-realist painter. He does a bunch of different kinds of painting, but he's a really amazing painter. And he was doing all these skies and cloud studies and suns and stuff like that. And I was seeing his paintings, and I was really obsessed with them. And I bought one that was just a cloud. And I was asking him for 2 years, I was like, if I make a record, I want to do like a cloud painting. And he was like, I was sending him photos of clouds, and he would, you know, be working on them. And then he's like, I'm doing this thing that you didn't ask for. And he sent me the painting of the sun, the sky, like just directly above. So it's a oil painting. And I really loved it. And then Michael Vedino, who's the art director for DFA, is like who I've worked on almost everything except for, I think, Losing My Edge. I think it's the only thing he did. He joined after Losing My Edge and Give It Up. Or maybe he did Give It Up. I can't remember. But anyway, he's been doing all that stuff with me forever. And I don't know, I really like it. I mean, I like the painting very much, and this is the cover art. I don't know what can be up with it. People.
No, it's fine. It's
no, there was an art, there was an article, and we were talking about this earlier, there was an article in, you know, like people were writing about the fact that some people on Twitter did not like it. But also that we released the cover art, which I think is a funny thing that, I don't know if that really counts as a release.
And also, I will just say, I do feel like having heard the record and seen the cover, I do think the two work together.
I mean, the cover's, it's supposed, I mean, I don't know what to say. The guy who wrote the article in Newsweek, I encourage people to read it because he dislikes the cover a lot, but is totally right about what's going on in the cover. Mm-hmm. So it's really funny. I was reading this, I was like, this is a really clever analysis of the cover. Except that you hate it because it's making you uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, for me, that's kind of the goal of it. It's a little oppressive, and it's a combination of sunshine and oppression, so.
That's great. Thank you so much. I love you, James Murphy.
Well,
Tom, you're all right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, buddy.
Thank you.
Final call. That's it. No more calls, Mike. You got me? No more.
No mas.
Best show. Hi.
Hi. I have a challenge for you and James.
Challenge? Well, I don't like the sound of this.
Yeah. I don't think there has been a rock record that's come out in the past 30 years that has redefined the genre, that has really expanded the possibility of what rock can do. But I want you two to see if you can prove me wrong.
In the last 30 years?
Last 30 years.
So you're saying it was
last 30
87?
Years, that's right.
In 97? What's 30 years? I can't tell 87.
Anymore. 87.
87. In the last 30 years?
That's right.
Hold on. 1987. So you don't think a record has come along that has redefined rock?
No. I think there's been good rock records.
Yeah, okay.
You know, there have been enjoyable
What's your
ones.
Favorite rock? Well, what's your
what's
favorite
the last
rock?
One that redefined rock for you?
Why are you saying 87? Like, what makes you...
If I had to pick one, I'd say Bad Moon Rising by Sonic Youth.
Yeah,
That's the last record that really took, like, elements that weren't in rock mm-hmm. and expanded the genre to the point where, of course, that's more influential. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're talking about a record that nobody heard, yeah. I might say Rear End Hernia Puppet Show by Caroliner. But that really hasn't had as big an impact as Sonic Youth, so I don't know if that counts.
Fine. Play your Nuff Said Caroliner cards. Look, I was at Maxwell's when they threw chairs at everybody. I did
they
my
hit
time
me in the face.
Carolina Rainbow. The last 30 years.
Yeah, I think that's a good cutoff point.
Let me think. That has completely...
Well, I mean, it changed as much as Bad Moon Rising?
Well, just because, I mean, you can't... I just can't think of a record that you would look at like, say... The Velvet Underground and Nico, or Nevermind the Bollocks, or something like that.
Nevermind the Bollocks, I would argue, didn't change rock that much. It's pretty traditional rock.
Yeah.
Pretty traditional sounding, but I think in a philosophical sense, it changed, like, what people thought they could accomplish with the music. You know, for a lot of people now, it wasn't just about selling a bunch of records and becoming a big star.
It was on a major label. That's completely not true. They signed to a major label. They weren't putting it out in their basement. They weren't Perubu.
No, of course they weren't. And then, you know, there's plenty of people who will say that the Sex Pistols were sellouts. I mean, just look at Crass.
I like Sex Pistols, but I mean, it's like, it's not that far off of, like, the Go-Go's musically mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. It's like...
Not musically, but I do feel like a lot of people took inspiration from that.
For sure.
Who otherwise wouldn't have ever...
But is that the measure, or something that... because the measure is either... that it added elements that were not in rock before or that people took influence from it. Because if you're asking if people took influence from it, you can just say, like, OK Computer, and then just, like, massive amounts of people just tried to make that record again.
Yeah. I think, I guess I'm saying about as far as, like, bringing something new to the music, but not necessarily in a musical sense, just it changed the way people thought about rock.
Well, then you can say Nevermind if you're thinking about not just in a musical sense and change the way people thought.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
if that's your criteria, then certainly Nevermind counts.
Yes, because that if you're going to say Nevermind the Bollocks, then
you can say
Nevermind.
Yeah. Full
and on. Then you can say Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't think so at all. I mean, what did Nevermind really bring to rock that hadn't been there before?
I don't think so at all.
Well,
all right, Egghead. Why did it drain all the fun out of something?
Well, I'm having fun, actually. This is fun for me.
Yeah, your idea of fun. Ugh.
My idea of fun.
Your idea of fun. God, look, I'm going to think about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's an interesting topic.
I think OK Computer is an easy one. Or Kid A.
Okay.
Kid A is an interesting choice. It's musically way ahead of what a lot of other rock bands were doing.
I'm glad you think so.
Yes.
No, but I mean, it's certainly starkly more powerfully different mm-hmm. sonically than pre-Nevermind the Bollocks, post-Nevermind the Bollocks. And you could search around the Nevermind the Bollocks for a million other things like that would have been more impactful, like the first Susie record or if you're sticking with John Lydon, mm-hmm. Metal Box or mm-hmm. Second Edition, or Flowers of Romance are absolutely more groundbreaking and earth-shattering in terms
of... Well, what about It Takes a Nation of Millions?
Oh, is that a rock record? And it is if you ask Hank Shockley, who is a metal guy.
That's a rock record. What about that, wise guy?
Which record?
It Takes a Nation of Millions by Public Enemy.
That's hip-hop. That's not rock.
That's hip-hop.
That's just introducing a new thing into rock.
Yes. Yeah, there's the new element.
No. Rap is an entirely different genre. It has nothing to do with rock.
Yeah, I think the guy who made that, Hank Shockley, would differ in his opinion with you.
And maybe. I don't know. I haven't talked to Hank Shockley, but I don't see hip-hop. I mean, hip-hop didn't even come from rock. It came from, like, reggae, Jamaican toasters.
You're
funk.
Get off my phone. I mean, I can't handle this guy. This guy drains all the fun out of a thing as fun as music. Turns it into homework. What a bummer.
Homework?
Yeah.
By Daft Punk.
There you go. Right? You did it. Why would I... What are these arguments? It's like I might as well argue about. He's the guy at a concert in this that's doing like the baseball thing of like writing doing like the little box score with a pencil. Yeah. Oh. Look, God bless you, guy. You're having a great time. You're bumming me out. You bummed me out. I got an A-plus guest here. This is a Halley's Comet-style guest. You think he's ever coming back here again? He's never coming back here again. This is it. We got everything we're ever going to get from this guy. I'll never see him at a thing that isn't him on stage. Never going to be in a room with this guy again. He's done with me.
I've already changed my email.
Because of what you just did. I'm putting it on you. How can you not say It Takes a Nation of Millions as a rock record? She watched Channel Zero, right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Slayer.
Because what we're saying is, yeah. let's know what we're talking about when we're talking about race.
Oh, come on, guy. What about chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water? Right, Limp Bizkit. You don't think that changed the game? Did change the game. Right? You remember the first time you heard Nookie? Right?
I knew where I was.
Remember when you heard boom, 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 boom? You're just like, what was that? Well, look.
I don't even know how I feel about it, but it's impacting me.
Yes. It's something's making me nauseous. It's like if you didn't realize you were on a cruise ship. If you didn't realize that Earth was a cruise ship.
Or that one of those oysters was a mistake.
Yes, that you one oyster seemed a little skunked.
And you didn't want to be the guy who gets all babyish about it. And now you're paying on the toilet holding a garbage can.
Paying in it, but you're trying to put a brave face on the whole thing. Well, James, thank you so much for coming. This is so much fun.
It's been a pleasure.
And
thanks for the Oreos.
Of course, that's another shirt. And the record is the record's legitimately great. I love it, and I can't wait till everybody gets to hear it and weigh in on it.
Me
and
too. I'm bored of it not being out, but that's life.
You're just a couple weeks away.
But I'm like a kid waiting for Christmas.
Yeah, except you're Santa.
I'm Santa.
Right?
Well, yes, I'm gray, bearded, and portly.
It's another shirt. I'm Santa.
I'm Santa. Who are you?
I'm Santa. I'm Santa. Who are you?
Yeah. That sounds like one of those shirts you'd get down on like 8th Street.
Yeah, that you're just like, who buys those things?
And then really wanted to go get the ones that it's a series of skeletons having sex. Like all the positions, but skeletons. It was such a bad shirt. And I loved that somebody was like, I've got it.
Yeah.
Here's my shirt.
That's me throwing.
Make hundreds of thousands of them and send them all over beach towns and into New York City's shirt district.
Final thing I'll say to you, I figured out my thing. You have LCD sound system.
Yes.
Next week, I am going to debut my act. You've heard of ventriloquism?
Yes.
I
Sventriloquism.
Am doing vape-triloquism. You get ready. This is my thing. I am going to become a vape-triloquist next week. Don't know what it means. On the radio. But we'll have people take
Well, the pictures. Biggest ventriloquist got famous on the radio.
Yeah, Charlie McCarthy. I'll be like that. I don't know if I'm supposed to get a ventriloquist dummy and make him vape, or if I talk to the actual vape thing as the dummy.
Or you're vaping. It's the equivalent of drinking the water while doing the ventriloquism.
Yeah, if I'm just like, what's that, Billy? And I'm like smoke coming out of my...
Yeah.
Tune in and find out. Again... Rest in peace, Glenn Campbell. Thank you, James Murphy, for coming by. This was so much fun.
It was a really great time.
You did not move your lips. That, you just took my gig away from me.
I really appreciated it.
At least I had it. Another song, maybe my favorite, even more than Galveston.
Bring it.
By the time I get to Phoenix, be back next week. Bye.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll find the note I left hanging on her door.